Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. It's Wednesday already. Accelerated work week.
I like that. Although, do you notice something, Bill?
What?
Sometimes when you have a shortened week, the week feels longer. I think this is going to be a good, fast week.
Yeah, I think so, too. I've said this in the past. I'm a huge proponent of the three-day weekend and the four-day work week. I can't get Congress in on this.
I know. Well, I'll vote for Trump if he'll do that.
Which is funny. You can't get Congress involved because they work almost 65 days a year.
Right, they do.
Aren't they back from their vacation?
They're back from their seven-week break, and they'll be working, actually, until October when they go home to campaign.
Yes. Right.
Wait, that's next month.
When you look at it that way, it doesn't seem like they contribute as much as the rest of society when you put it on paper that way. But I'm sure they do. Positive they do.
Actually, they're public servants, Bill. So
right. I know that.
Why did you look at me so peculiarly when I said I'll vote for Trump if he can make a 4-day work week and 3-day weekends?
Because I always think like. He'll
promise me that, you know.
That's kind of what I was going to say.
A lot of people are saying he can do it.
Right.
Right. He can do anything.
Right.
If you put your mind to it, you can do anything.
I wish somebody, and maybe somebody has on the internet, has kept track of campaign promises versus what's actually come to fruition. I have a feeling that percentage would be low.
God, who wants that job?
Don't you think?
It would be depressing every day.
Just to see if any of the promises really actually happen. Several things to discuss with you today. First of all, I know this is strange, but you mentioned something before the show started about a slight domestic disagreement, and I don't know if you want to talk about it on air or not.
It's
Do you want to?
It's not a disagreement. It's guy girl. That's all.
What happened? Everything's all right?
Well, it's I have to run out to my car. Or do we have an intern?
No.
I during our lunch break yesterday, I went over to Nordstrom and bought a pair of peep toe booties.
Is that something that really exists, or did you just make that up?
I just wanted to see your face when I said that.
That sounds like something that your mom would throw in your Easter basket that would be stale, doesn't it? The jelly beans were great, but the peep toe booties, I got to be honest, were a little flat.
Ugh. It's like an ankle boot, and the heel is exposed,
yeah,
and the toes. There's a little cutout where the toes, peep toe, that's where that comes
from. Yeah.
And I thought they were really cute. They're really comfortable. They were on sale.
Are they for Kevin's wedding? You're going to wear them to the wedding?
No, they're more cash.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't rock a booty at a wedding.
No.
Could you make a poster that says that, Kevin, and just have that in the hall
somewhere? Like that.
Yep.
You can't rock a booty at a wedding?
Yeah. I would love to just read those words in glittery letters when I came in.
Now he makes me want to wear a booty.
All right, so you purchased a pair of those.
Yeah, and I loved them, and I tried them on last night. You know, you don't wear the shoes outside because if there's any scuff mark, you can't return them.
Sure.
So I was walking around in the kitchen. I said, "Don't you love my new shoes?" And Jim's looking at my feet. He goes, "What would you wear those with?"
Uh-huh.
I said, "What I have on now, a pair of crop jeans."
Uh-huh.
He goes, "Wen, I got to be honest with you. It looks like your feet are in casts."
Oh, and that's probably not the look you were going for.
Yeah, so now I can't get past that and I have to return them.
All right. If I were you, and I know you're upset about this because obviously you love these, but I applaud your husband for being honest because most guys in that situation would take the easy route and just go, yeah, they look fantastic.
Especially when I set it up like, don't you love my new shoes?
Well, that's leading the witness. You can't lead the witness. That's not fair.
But he wouldn't be led.
No, he was obviously, he's not a lemming. He knows better.
He's so honest, and
lucky.
I appreciate that.
That's a good thing.
But he's like, yeah, the what would you wear him with was the first red flag.
Right, because that never equals.
This outfit
equals,
I'm wearing now.
That never equals, boy, do I love those.
Right.
Let's go upstairs now and go through your closet and find things that you could wear those with. You knew that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, no, it was, what are you going to wear those with? And then, really, when? Looks like your feet are in casts.
All right, I'm sure that you didn't take that well.
No, I looked down and I said, oh, but they're so comfortable and I love them. And then I go, they do. They do look like my feet are in casts.
Oh. Well, it depends. Who do you buy clothes for yourself or for him?
Well, I buy his clothes.
I know you buy his clothes, but like when you're shopping for yourself, do you say, I want this because I like the way it looks?
Yeah.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
So despite that, you're still going to return these, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh. Because now I feel, and I got to go grab them because we can take a picture of them, and I want your honest
opinion.
All right,
I'll be honest.
Kevin, do we have anybody who can run out to my car?
I mean, I guess I could abandon ship and...
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe upstairs.
All right. Can we borrow Bennett? I forgot him.
Yeah.
And I have to return him because now I can't get past it.
Yeah.
And are very comfortable.
Every time you see him now, you'll think, uh-oh, it looks like I'm in casts. And that's
really
not the look you want to give off, is it?
No. And yesterday we learned something from Bug Hall, who was here.
The actor.
Is that his name?
The great actor Bug Hall. Yeah, he was on yesterday.
He said something very interesting that, Kevin, I hope you took notice of, and Bill, I'm sure you are already aware of this because you've been married 20 years.
Way more.
How many years? Were you 25?
Yeah, I think 26 now.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a lot more.
Didn't you just celebrate your 25th anniversary?
Was it? No, I think it was 26th, wasn't it?
I can't.
I think.
Oh, my God, you're asking me. Yeah, first of all, don't ever do that.
I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was.
But what Bug Hall said yesterday, which really rang a bell,
mm-hmm.
when we said Kevin was getting married and he's getting married, when a woman asks you to choose, like, mm-hmm. do you like this or that,
mm-hmm.
she's unsure. Because typically, we can make up our own mind. We don't need your approval. But if we're unsure of something, that's when we turn to you say, what do you think of my new shoes?
But there's no way for the guy to win in that.
Right. Unsure doesn't mean she wants the right answer.
No.
But no. Now, see, Jim won in this because he said they look like my feet are in casts. And so now I'm going to return them because if he didn't say that, I'd wear them and then maybe somebody would think that on the street.
Right.
Oh, my God. Did you have a double ankle surgery? No. I got new shoes.
You don't want new shoes to bring sympathy.
No,
right?
I want
That's
them
the
to
last
rock.
Thing you want. Yeah,
I just
right.
think they're the wrong color. So if they were a dark gray, they're kind of like a wheaten color.
Can I suggest? I know you think then if you swapped them out and got another color and brought them home that would figure things out, but it would make it worse because then he'll go, "Well, you still look like you were in an accident, but now it looks like the blood has dried." You know, you don't want that.
I'm not going
you want
to
a,
get
You
them.
Want a totally different style.
Yeah. No, I'm right yeah. around that style, but not this particular one.
All right.
So we'll have to take a picture of
I
my
want to see what they look
like.
Booties. I'll be honest, but honesty has come back to haunt your husband, so I'm not
no,
sure.
I'm
no,
totally,
you're not mad
is,
at him at
no.
all?
No.
All right.
I am so 100% glad he said it looked like my feet were in casts.
Did you hug him? Did you just run up and give him the biggest hug of all time and
no.
go... That's why I love you.
But it's funny because when he said that, I go, I don't care. I love them, and they're so comfortable. And then I'm looking at him. I go, God, they do look like my feet are in casts.
You copped to that? You told him
yeah.
he was right? Okay, good. Good.
So
that's good news.
He scored one.
I think
See,
he did.
Husbands and Kevin, take this advice. Be honest, but do it in a nice way. I guess that wasn't really nice, but...
No, but it was honest.
I say be honest.
I think sometimes you just need to be reassuring, not less than honest.
That's true.
I mean... It can be both.
Yeah, but it's hard to be both.
People just want to, and not just wives, but people just want to be reassured
right.
with their choice.
So be honest, but not too
yeah,
honest.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're writing this down, right, Kevin?
Yeah.
All right.
Right? Because if Jim had said, you look great in those, then you would have been very happy. You would have never looked at yourself as if you're wearing two pink casts.
They're white.
White casts.
Beige.
Beige. Well, where did the pink come from?
I don't know. You pulled that out of your butt.
Okay.
Pink would be nice.
I'm not wearing... Do you see
That's
me in
neutral.
Pink shoes?
That's
Look at me.
That's a neutral color. You can get a part in Grease. All right.
Let's or take, Good and Plenty box. Right.
Wouldn't that be nice? All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we have more show. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy had a situation at the house yesterday, which I applaud you for, and I applaud your husband for.
It's not a situation.
You went out and you purchased some shoes during the lunch break.
On
and
sale.
Very, of course.
$70 on sale.
Have women ever purchased a pair of shoes that have not been on sale?
Yes.
That's the selling point whenever my wife buys anything.
But we don't tell you when we buy them when they're not on sale, or we lie.
I know. I know that. All right, so you brought them home. You loved them, but Jimmy, your husband.
I wasn't sure.
Oh, you bought them without being sure.
I really liked them. I tried them on. I'm like, God, these are so cute.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't 100% sure, so I tried them on for Jim, a peep-toe booty. I said, what do you think? Don't you love my new shoes?
Leading the witness.
But he wouldn't be led.
Wouldn't you have just said, like I would say,
what do you think
what
of these?
What do you think of these? Not, don't you love these?
Yeah, if I hear, don't you love these, I love them.
No, but see, but even if you don't lie. Don't lie.
It's not a lie.
It's self-preservation.
It's not even that. It's just supportive.
Don't you love them? And he says, what are you going to wear them with? And I'm like, well, what I'm wearing now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. It looks like your feet are in casts.
Oh. Ouch.
God, love him.
Ouch.
Well, I, you know, someone texted, oh, my God, he said that and you're returning them. If I loved them, I would keep them. I'm not sure about the love. I thought it was false love.
But so you did love them until someone else said, you know, the emperor had no clothes sort of thing.
Right.
I loved them because there was a sale rack at Nordstrom and these were the best in the rack and I wanted to get something. Yeah. And I liked them and I thought I loved them, but they really do look like both my feet are in casts. But Sandy has a really good idea when I wear them, if I keep them. Sandy, what should I do?
I think you should let everybody sign your cast.
Wouldn't that look nice?
It would look so cool.
Right.
You can start a new trend.
Bill, will you be the first to sign my shoes?
I would love to.
I love it, Sandy. Thank you so much.
That's a great idea.
Starting a new trend.
Yeah.
Kevin mentioned you can't rock a booty at a wedding.
Yeah, Kevin, you said that out loud.
I don't think I said that.
I heard you say that.
I think that was Steve.
Somebody said I rocked the booty last Saturday at a wedding.
Whoa.
And someone said you can totally rock a booty at a wedding, but you should probably do it in the coat room. I think we're thinking of two different things.
Slightly different things, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you ever asked your husband, do these jeans make my butt look big?
You don't want to say that ever.
That is totally leading the witness.
Yeah, you never want to say it that way. You just, again, you say, what do you think of these? Does this look nice? What do you think?
But if I love them, I will go, don't you love these new jeans? You know me. I can't just go,
right.
What do you think of these jeans?
Right.
I show my exuberance when I'm exuberant.
I've noticed that.
I'm so glad you said exuberance.
Right. Right. Right.
I don't know what to tell you other than it looks like I have two casts on my feet and I will run and get them and we will take a picture of them and put it on our Facebook page.
With the phrase on there, don't you just love these shoes?
Yes.
Because...
In Steve's defense, says 815, I thought they were pink also. In the beginning of your story, I thought you said something about buying pink booties.
You did.
I said peep toe booties.
Oh, maybe it just sounded like pink. Maybe we were all just envisioning pink,
right, because
that would only make them better.
Because for the rest of my life, I'll never know what a peep toe booty is.
I explained it. There's like a little hole cut out where you can show your pedicure for a little bit longer in the season. It's a peep toe booty. Your toe's peeping out.
It sounds like something illegal is going on with these shoes. Something immoral almost. Doesn't it? Are these for peeping Toms who want to buy a gift for somebody? Who are these for?
No, and then someone texted, did Wendy's husband ever find his keys and wallet, which he was missing for 3 days?
Yes.
It was in a hoodie after he took the dog for a walk, and the hoodie went in a pile in the basement in the laundry basket. Lo and behold, keys, wallet.
Were they in one of his peep neck hoodies that he's been wearing?
No.
That he's had specially crafted for himself?
But to give you an idea of what I deal with, last night, getting ready to go to bed, dinner's been served, homework's pretty much done. Jim's like, I'm running back to the health club. I said, I thought you already worked out. He goes, I left my shoes there.
Oh, he did. He's on a streak.
I know.
What's wrong? What's going on
there? I don't
know.
I don't know.
I think maybe as you get older... You just have a propensity to misplace more and more things, don't you? Don't you think that's part of life, kind of?
Yeah, but it's terrible. I mean,
it's just terrible.
To go back there and get your shoes. I said, just call him and tell him to put them off to the side and you'll pick them up next time you're there.
Right.
He has several pairs of gym shoes.
Yeah. I left my wedding ring at a gym once and it was still there.
In the same spot?
I called them. I was.
What, were there some hot girls working out next to you?
What kind of gym is this? Honey, I'm going to the gym again.
It hurts to lift weights with a ring. I get you.
It really does.
You get a callus.
And now it really does. So I was on this is back when I was doing stand up, and I was somewhere in Kansas City, and I was working out at a health club, and every time I did a certain kind of curl, it rubbed my ring finger. So I took it off and put it on the side of the machine and then realized that night I left it there.
The whole night went by.
And I called them the next morning, and I said, look, I know
what
the
odds
of
this. What does yours look like? We found 10.
Right. Were they we got a whole room full.
Were they in a pair of tan cargo shorts?
But I thought, not only have I just kissed my wedding ring goodbye, but Terry's not going to like this at all, you know? I only get $20 a day. Do you know how many days it's going to take me to save up to buy another wedding ring? So I called them and I said, look, I already know the answer to this, but I left a wedding ring there yesterday and they started to describe it, which should have been my job.
Yeah.
It should have gone the other way. You described the ring. They should have described it to me. It was there. Somebody turned it in. How lucky.
That is lucky.
That doesn't happen a lot.
You know, yesterday, and I don't know if this is a sign, but yesterday I threw my wedding ring, engagement ring, 10th anniversary ring, all connected. I threw it in the garbage.
On purpose?
Nope.
Because of the
after
shoes?
The shoes.
No,
yeah.
No, this was before.
This
I took my rings off to put some hair product on.
On your hands?
Well, it goes on my hands first, and then
oh,
in
on
my
your
hair.
All right, I thought you were having a problem with hairy hands.
I think she's accepted that now.
And
though.
I had thrown the rings in my pocket, but I also had a tissue in my pocket. So when I went to throw the tissue out, I only found one ring. And I said, uh-oh, where's the wedding ring? And it was right there on top of the coffee grounds.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very, very lucky. What
a lucky day that was for you.
Peep toe ring.
Yeah, how about that? All right, a break and then some news and then more show. Dr. John Duffy will be with us today. Several doctors joining the show today, by the way. A doctor will be on in the second half to talk about lying. And the timing couldn't be better.
No one lied here.
No, I know. I'm
and
just
Bobby
saying,
Skafish is going to come by, too.
Right.
He's written a book. He's really one of the best interviewers ever and totally rock and roll. We both worked with him at The Loop. And
except for me, but both of us did.
You weren't there when he was there?
No, he wouldn't work with me.
I just picture you and me together forever.
He would not.
BFFs.
Yes, similar. All right, let's take a break and then some news. It's Phil and Wendy WGN.
Boogie with you.
KC and the Sunshine Band?
Yes.
Correct. All right, it's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy yesterday purchased a pair of shoes at Nordstrom's right across the street during the lunch hour, brought them home to her husband. He was less than enthusiastic about these shoes, said that they looked like you had two casts on.
Right.
And you really like them.
I don't know. I just tried them on.
You said, don't you love these shoes?
Yeah.
I just tried them on again now, and I just said off the air, I might be keeping these.
Oh.
Although I feel bad. 708, somebody sent a picture in and said, both my feet are in casts. I hope your shoes don't look that bad.
Oh, yeah. That picture is gruesome.
Hold it up, Wendy. Let me see. Not the picture of the shoes. Let me see them.
No, we'll have to take. I have them on.
You're,
can I show
right.
you, Bill?
Yeah, I want to see them. Let's see. Now, just for the record, you love them or think you love them. Jimmy, not quite loving them. I think those are fantastic.
You're lying to me.
I'm not lying to you.
Okay, tell her to stop right there. I can see them.
Can you see them, Steve?
I saw them as,
I don't know how he could not like those.
I saw them as you walked around by the Allstate sign.
Those are fantastic.
Sign. Those are cute.
Really?
You got to keep those. Why would you wear those with anything?
See, I don't trust either of you at all. I only trust Kevin.
I could totally see my wife wearing those, like at a party, and those are very nice.
Those are really nice.
Kevin, I will not rock them at your wedding, but come and look at these and tell me what you
think. I saw you. I saw you walk out. I think you could rock them at a wedding. I think they are nice shoes.
I think you picked some nice shoes, Wendy.
You have to keep those.
I don't believe either of you.
That's a mean thing to say.
What do we have to lose? We don't have anything to gain in.
To make me look like I have two club feet when I'm walking down the street. I don't trust you.
That's not as nothing to do with the shoes. No, I thought they looked kind of nice.
They're fantastic. They're a neutral color. They're like a silver almost.
They're
like
not pink at all.
No, they're
it's
not
like
even a little pink.
Gray.
Like a light gray.
Yeah,
you could wear those casually. You could wear those to dress.
I don't believe you.
Are they suede?
What?
Yes.
I could feel the suede up here.
I've seen a handful of women, you know, sport those, and I think it's a good
That's
look.
How women travel in handfuls.
Handful of women.
Like a pride of lions. I saw a handful of women the other day.
With their manes,
have
their big hair.
Have you seen Kevin's hands? That's a lot of women.
Yeah, that's a bunch of women.
Plus, if you buy Tom's shoes, listen to this. Every pair you purchase, Tom's will give a pair of new shoes to a child in need.
A poor kid can have similar shoes to you. That'd
They're
be
not
going to
give them these type of shoes.
No, but you're different looking ones. Good and you're helping the people too. So
yeah,
you
got to
keep
those. Jimmy's out of his mind. Those are fantastic.
I can't believe he said that to you.
You guys, I really, first of all, Bill, I believe everything you say, which is stupid of me. And well, Bertrand, you're a close second.
Come on.
That's hurtful.
It is hurtful. Hurtful.
That is very hurtful.
I think they look kind of nice. Wendy, really.
Keep those.
I think they're cute.
Yep. I'd wear those every day.
Steve, you have to be straight up with me because you are kind of a shoe horse as well. And I notice your new shoes all the time.
You do. And I just noticed yours. I like them.
You got to keep those.
I'm not a shoe horse, by the way.
Miscarriage of justice to return those shoes.
Think of the kids.
Think of the kids, Wendy.
I'm keeping them.
You have to keep them. And wear them on Jim's birthday. Wear them to the next Star Wars premiere.
I think you made the right decision.
I really don't believe either of you. I'm sorry. I love you, but I don't believe you.
Oh,
is it hot in
that
here?
That hurts. No, it's the shoes are too tight.
Got a little hotter after you walked in those shoes.
That's right.
Oh, nice pickup line. God.
That's right.
Kevin, yes or no?
I like them. I say yes.
You got it. Yeah.
I'm just a guy. What do guys know?
They don't look like my feet are in casts.
We didn't say that.
No, they don't.
Can't it serve both purposes? Can't they look really nice and look like you were in a small accident?
So
isn't it possible?
Look like I was hobbled?
They're stylish.
Yes.
They're stylish and orthopedic.
Yeah, they look like they provide great ankle support.
Yeah.
That's important.
Uh-huh.
Did Wendy go to the cobbler today? No, she went to the hobbler. I'm keeping them. Plus, they match my outfit.
Yeah.
Right. You stand up
you
for yourself.
You got to keep them.
I just wasn't sure. And then when Jim said
there
it, I
shouldn't
looked
be
down
any
and
doubt. You should. That's crazy.
Whatever.
You got to keep them. Wear them.
I like them.
Yep. Jimmy doesn't know.
Can I tell you buying?
You're not married to Jimmy Choo.
Jimmy Choo
Jimmy
actually
Choo
does
makes
shoes.
Right.
I wish I was married to Jimmy Choo.
That'd be crazy.
I'd be rich, and I'd have all the shoes I wanted and handbags.
Right. You should have thought about that. The name Jimmy was already on the marriage certificate. You should have said, "Well, I'll go with that one instead."
Someone wants to know why I'm asking straight men. I should go out and find a gay guy and ask him.
If you feel the need, all right, that's fine.
Well, what do you just go up to somebody? Do you like my shoes? Are you straight or gay?
Yeah. Well, in that order, I guess. You don't want to offend.
All right. What did you discuss when I went to my car?
We're talking sports for a little while.
The Cubs are starting to make playoff
tickets
available. Thank you, 630.
Tell me more.
What?
Huh?
What?
So what, did you just say you're going to say you like them regardless?
Oh, we
does that
do
sound
that.
Like something we would do?
No.
That's not what we do.
Come
we're
on, here. When?
We're on the honesty team.
Oh, when? Really?
We play the game
Bert.
Of honesty.
They're cute.
No, trusty. What did they say, Kevin?
What?
Who, the caller?
No, what did Bill and Kevin talk about?
Don't pick on the weakest link.
Oh, wow.
I love it. It's all falling apart right now. What'd you guys say? Come on, fess up.
I think somebody might have said that you're down right now and we're your friends and we need to be supportive of
we're
you.
We're going to lift you up.
Yeah.
So you're just going to say yes when you...
No,
you
that never came
See,
up.
See, I knew
no.
not to trust
That's
you.
That's not what happened at all.
We want to lift you up.
Right.
Okay, let me just say this. Maybe something was said along something like that. However, when I did see the shoes, my initial reaction was, those are nice shoes. Regardless of what may or may have not been said.
And I thought they made you look like the mummy. I thought Lon Chaney was trying on shoes for me.
Didn't you feel nice? You were. Yes, you did.
Fake.
You had your
They're
legs
off.
Up. You
They're
had
going
your.
Back.
No, don't
no.
take them back.
Come on.
They're
you had.
Don't
back.
Take them back.
You had your feet up on the console. You were admiring your
yes.
little toes sticking out.
Yes.
You were feeling happy.
Kevin, call Nordstrom's. Tell them not to accept these. That Wendy stole them. She shoplifted them.
Receipt.
And that she was in a fire.
I like them.
Yes. Here, you notice how Kevin, the weakest
anymore,
link,
Kevin.
Said that.
You're said, guilt by association.
He said they made it up, but I kind of like him now.
Yeah.
That's a total...
He's
getting married. Leave him alone.
He's
got to practice.
I got to deal with this at home enough. I mean...
Forget it.
No, don't bring him back.
Shut up, Bill.
You have
to
bring him back.
Think of the children.
You're taking back... A poor kid is losing his shoes right now. Steve Madden is taking away a poor kid's shoes.
It's your fault. You would have just told me the truth.
It's 630's fault.
Right.
Thank you, 630.
What's the rest of 630's number? I'm calling them later.
We have to take a break. And right. I'm going to Nordstrom.
No. All right. A quick break. More honesty.
I knew not to trust you. We're talking to a lying doctor today.
I know. How about that?
You guys suck.
The Lion King. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I hope you're not upset with Steve and with Kevin.
No,
I hope you're not.
I got a pair of shoes through my little Stitch Fix that I do. They send you items and you decide whether or not you want them. Mm-hmm. And they were way cuter than these, and I tried to copy it, but those had a 4-inch heel. I can't walk in a 4-inch heel. I'm no Huggy
heel.
Bear.
Wow. I think Elton John's and Tommy were only 3.5. That seemed high to me. 4-inch.
I showed them to Steve Bertrand, these shoes off the air, the peep toe booties, and he says, yeah, those are really I can't even see them. They look like a roller skate.
Yeah.
It's hard to see from here, but you look good in them.
Yeah. You pull it off.
Nice try, guys.
I don't know if we mentioned this on air yesterday or not, but do you know whose jersey is the top seller of all NFL players? Who is selling more jerseys right now than anybody else in professional football?
Brian Urlacher still.
It's not. There
he
was
has
a
hair
time.
Now.
I know he does have hair.
So now they're furry jerseys.
Right. They're Chia jerseys. It is not Brian Urlacher, although that was true for several years. Brian Urlacher did have the number one selling NFL jersey, but not anymore because he's been out of the league for a while. But who
do you think everybody
it is?
Bought them, and then they went on sale.
Right.
Is that like a compliment, or is that embarrassing when Brian Urlacher walks around and sees them everywhere?
I think it's a compliment. You still see that at any professional sporting event, legends of the past. You go to a Blackhawks game, you see a lot of Hull and Makita jerseys. It keeps their name alive. It keeps their legacy. I like that. I think that's a good thing. That's why I wear my
left jersey.
Yeah, wear that
with a big middle finger on it instead of a number.
Number one. That's what it is. I'm number one. So whose jersey? This is strange that this would be, but it is. It's the number one selling jersey as of today. According to NFLShop.com, they're selling more of this far and away than anybody else in professional football.
Is he a current player?
Yep.
Jay Cutler.
It's not Jay Cutler.
There are a lot of those, too.
You got to get out of town.
Yeah, it's not a Chicago Bear. And Jay Cutler's jersey is great if you've just bought, like, a parrot or something, and you need something to line the bottom of the cage. That would be a great option. So whose would it be nationally?
Well, I don't know.
It would be Colin Kaepernick has the number one selling NFL jersey. And I'm trying to figure out, isn't it shocking? It is. I'm trying to figure out the psychology of it. Sales of the San Francisco 49er quarterback's merchandise have been steadily rising. On Tuesday, that's just yesterday, his jersey is now recognized as the number one NFL top selling item, the Colin Kaepernick jersey.
Well, I think that shows that a lot of people think he has a point. I mean,
doesn't it? It does,
or
right?
Or is it just that he's popular now and you want a jersey that's popular?
No.
Well, he's
why
not
he
popular
that?
Now.
Well,
he's...
he is pop. That's the point. You know, we argue about the method of protest and should he be doing this or not. But if you look, you know, where people are putting their money where their mouth is,
right. They're
supporting him.
It is getting the message across, right? So even though we've all been kind of thinking the same or similar things of, isn't there a better way to do this? As it turns out, maybe this is a good way to get some kind of attention.
But what's been done since he did that?
That's the problem is there's not. I think most of us agree that there is some racial injustice in the country. But
a lot of it.
There is a lot of it. But it's the next step that matters most, not just recognizing it, but doing something about it. But that's the part that we're all kind of just kind of grabbing
and
at.
Think of it now, what you're going to have are all these people walking around wearing Colin Kaepernick jerseys in cities around the country.
Right.
What I did read, and this kind of does have an impact, is he's going to be donating, I think, like the first $1 million.
That's what he said, a million.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I guess he gets a cut of the jersey sales.
Yeah, yep. Well, he said he was going to donate $1 million. I don't think from this, Kevin. I think he said from his salary.
Maybe that's what, okay.
Right?
All right, well, then he's doing something.
He is doing something.
Then I'm buying a jersey.
Kaepernick has been protesting police brutality and the oppression of people of color by not standing for the U.S. national anthem before games. He plans to continue this protest during the regular season. Now, here's a side problem that it doesn't say in this story, but I've read about this the last couple of days. The side problem is they hire a certain amount of police officers in San Francisco to police these games. So their union is saying, maybe we don't want to come and take care of the 49ers games with all this going on. Maybe it's best that we just not be at these games, and that's going to create a problem. I mean, I guess they could go to a private security firm. That's what they'll probably end up having to do. but now you've got more tension with San Francisco police.
So the officers are against the expression of First Amendment rights? Is that what they're coming out against?
See, wouldn't this give them an opportunity to come and show that they can do good? I just feel like they're going to be a target. And I bet they're feeling that, too.
That's a concern.
One other thing, you know, a little bit related, I did in the 10 o'clock news. I don't know if you heard, but Darren Seals was this young man, African-American man in Ferguson, Missouri, who led a lot of the protests and all. Was found murdered, apparently, in a car outside Ferguson yesterday.
Terrible.
Car on fire, and he was shot to death.
Awful. Just terrible. On Monday, President Barack Obama praised him, that's Colin Kaepernick, for having, and I quote here,
the best fro in the world. That thing's awesome.
He does have, he looks like Link from the Mod Squad now.
It is unreal.
I was thinking Christy Love.
Teresa Graves. he's got an incredible head of hair.
It is really great.
President Barack Obama praised him, Colin Kaepernick, for having generated more conversation around some topics that need to be talked about. Agreed. Kaepernick's actions have resulted in furious debate. All eyes will be on the pivot when the 49ers open their season Monday at home against the Los Angeles Rams, even though he will be on the bench. He has not been named as the starting quarterback, so he'll be there. But
God, don't you start him at this point?
Well, you can't start him based on this. You know, it has to be from by ability.
Well,
it has to be.
How do you explain Cutler?
But he's not been playing well.
I guess, but that would just be a good move because then the whole world will be watching.
Well, you know, everybody will be watching kind of anyway. But it's silly because we already know the answer. He's going to kneel down during. That's what he's been doing now is kneeling down instead of standing up for this.
We are almost out of time, but Barbara, what are the police protesting?
The police are protesting the socks that he wears, which are pictures of pigs with police hats on them.
Yeah. See, isn't that pushing it too far? And
that
isn't
is.
That kind of...
Well, I don't think that that has the same connotation as kneeling for the flag. And you also have some hockey players that were told that if they kneel... If they do not stand when the national anthem is played, they're not going to play that game. I mean, it's just, it's in the news. So that's a good thing, as everybody's talking about.
Where does he wear those socks? Because the NFL is very tight about what you can wear. I'm surprised by
that. Well, he tweeted them out, right? There was a picture of him wearing those socks.
Oh, I don't know. I thought that it showed him in uniform while
he
was
can't
eating.
Wear. Yeah, he can't. He's not allowed to in
I
uniform.
Saw, like, you know, a pair
just
of brown
shoes. Just in his own
yeah.
time. Yeah.
Still, though, don't tweet that out.
That's been on the news a lot.
Yeah. So. Well, thank you, Barbara. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Barbara. Appreciate it. So I guess, you know, the biggest surprise here is you would think with all the scrutiny he's been under that his jersey would take a huge hit, but just the opposite. It's the number one selling NFL jersey.
All right. And let's support what's going on and let's try and fix the problem.
Yeah. If there's a way, if there's a way, let's figure it out. All right, we need to take a quick break. Steve has the news coming up next. Then Dr. John Duffy stops by. A lot more ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Kevin, are you insinuating that Dr. John Duffy is our hero?
He's my hero.
It's accurate.
I like that,
Kevin. It's 100% accurate.
Dr. John Duffy, you can go to his website, drjohnduffy.com. He's a clinical psychologist, a best-selling author, certified life coach. His book is The Available Parent, and it's really helpful. It's really tough being a parent, and try as we may, we're not always perfect.
You'd think by now we'd have it down, right? Generation after generation.
Oh, people have been parents for hundreds of years at
right.
this point, John. It's crazy.
Right. Sometimes I think about that, like, you know, wow, after, you know, we watched our parents and their parents before them, we'd have it completely down, but... I don't know. Maybe it's the technology that's ahead of us. I'm not sure, but we're still working on it.
Well, since we're on that topic, I'm sure you heard earlier today we were telling the story about how Wendy made a purchase. She bought some shoes, showed them to her husband. He was less than enthusiastic about them.
Very honest.
But isn't it one of those things where if you have kids in the house, and you do, you say, okay, this is working on two levels. Level number one is the reality of you and me, but also there are kids watching, and so many times parents need to be cognizant of that, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, we are always, always modeling for our kids. You know, I had a couple in last night. They are parents of four, awesome, but they argue a lot.
Yeah.
And the problem with their whole family situation. The only problem is they argue and the kids kind of follow suit.
Oh.
And then they're like, well, what's their problem? And, you know, really their sole problem is this is what they're being taught.
Right.
Right. This is the culture of the family. And so, you know, they've got to do something to mitigate that. And, yeah. you know, it'll help their relationship and it'll to, you know, find a way to cease the arguing. And it'll help their relationships with their kids and their kids' future relationships going forward as well.
But they, what? Oh, go on.
No, they do pick that up, though, because, you know, my dad died when I was 10, so I don't really know how their relationship was. I wasn't aware of it.
Right.
But my brother and sister will go on to say, oh, Mom and Dad argued all the time. And I'm like, really? I have no recollection of that.
Right.
But kids do remember everything that goes on in that house, unbeknownst to you sometimes.
True. And what some parents do is they decide, okay, we're going to argue behind closed doors. We're going to make sure the kids are never exposed to it. I don't know if that's healthy either, you know, because I think sometimes sure. every relationship is going to have some conflict. Some brilliant psychologist, not me, long ago said, if two of you agree on everything, one of you is unnecessary, which I thought was pretty funny.
I love wow. that.
Right?
Blunt.
So, you know, disagreements are fine.
Yeah, right.
As long as they're civil and, right. you know, and you keep them contained, you know, and I think that models something really healthy for kids going forward in their relationships.
How do you tactfully say to a kid that you're working with, a lot of your behavior is because you're kind of sponging off of your parents' behavior. You can't say that because you're throwing them under the bus to some extent, but it needs to be established that they're not at fault, right?
Right, and sometimes I'll work with parents and kind of coach them through talking with their kids about that
yeah.
because, you know, a lot of therapy is family-based stuff, and so to have parents kind of deliver a message is more powerful than to have it come from, you know,
oh,
me,
sure.
you know, this guy out here. And shifting the modeling always works, you know,
yeah.
like, Mom and Dad, we've had these problems, but we're working on it. We're going to change it. And you can call us out on it. If
yeah.
you see that we're not getting along very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was criticized, earlier this week, and this was really a poor choice. The Rob Lowe roast was on Comedy
yes.
Central. And both kids were like, oh, set the, you know, DVR. We want to watch it. And we all watched it together. And it was filthy.
Uh-huh.
And it was they beeped out the F words, but they should have just had one long beep for the whole roast. And, you know, half of me thinks, yeah, that probably was not a good thing to watch with the kids. But they were going to watch it anyway. We watched it. We groaned at the same time. You can't control what your kids watch and see at any given moment,
no.
and we watched it together.
No, I love that you watched it together instead of like in separate corners of a house, which happens all the time, right? So your kids are watching it. They're not supervised. They don't have a foil to talk to about, like, you know, okay, what was that about? You
mm-hmm.
know, that seemed like a really vulgar, mean comment. And, you know, and then you get the you're going to laugh and everybody's going to laugh inappropriately. It's a roast. But every once in a while, something might cross the line and you can kind of pause it and say, let's talk about this first.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it gives you this right. opportunity that you would never have.
Yeah, we had to talk about a lot of stuff.
Oh. Yeah. But better to do it together than apart.
It
know?
Is, isn't it?
Yeah,
it makes
always.
A huge difference.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. That's why I always like when, you know, if families are TV watchers, if they're together, then something's getting done. Even if you're not saying a whole lot, something's getting done, right? You're
right.
sharing an experience as opposed to, you know, everyone staring at a separate screen doing separate things, which is not sharing anything, and it's isolating, and it can be kind of anxiety provoking, depressing in the end as well.
And there's no discussion.
Right. Right.
Don't we all kind of know at this point that our kids are privy to a lot more, I'll
dirty
just say information.
Stuff.
Yes.
Dirty stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it used to take some doing to find contraband material when you were a kid, but now, because of the internet or because of satellite or cable television, you kind of know that whenever you're not around, your kids have access to almost anything imaginable.
You would think that every parent would know that, and I think fundamentally we do, although
yeah.
I talk to parents frequently, and this feels like a surprise to them. When we were kids, I remember, like, wow, the dirty magazines are right behind this counter, behind the guy,
yeah.
behind the register. And at some point, you just give up, right?
Yeah.
Whereas our kids, it's like, you know, an accidental Google search away. Like,
right.
you know, I've heard that whitehouse.org is something you don't want to look up.
No,
right.
.org is the governmental, right? .com is the one.
.com, maybe it is.
That's,
but
yeah.
but something, whitehouse.something is
yeah.
horrid, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's important that we recognize our kids have access to everything. So to fool yourself into thinking anything different, and to ignore, you know, informing them about the way you feel about sex and drugs and rock and roll and the whole deal is a mistake. You know, even at young ages, you know, if your kid has access to a screen at 8, you're going to have to talk to him about what he has access to.
Yeah. And you're going to have to answer their questions, because I get questions that I'm not prepared to field.
Right.
But I answer them as honestly as I can.
Some of those questions come from me, by the way.
But seriously, some of these questions are like, whoa. But I try to answer them and not, I don't act like worried about it,
right.
Or I just try to act pretty normal, like, oh, where'd you hear that? And then I answer the questions. The good news is I keep getting asked more questions, which I'd rather have a conversation.
Absolutely. You want your kids to hear all of this stuff or as much as possible from you. And a lot of the issue there is getting past your anxiety. Kids now are very open
they
about talking.
No
monitor.
Nothing.
Nope. It's very easy for them to talk about things that, you know, a generation ago we were really, really reluctant to talk about. And I can say that with authority. You know, I'm a relative stranger, and, you know, and kids are willing to talk about sex and drugs and everything
right.
in that room. And it's impressive in a way. But when parents come along and they're trying to just issue, even if it's not a lecture, just a couple of words, you can feel their anxiety. You can feel the parents just want to let's get this lecture over with and move on with life, you know?
Sure.
And it's got to be an ongoing discussion. Kids today are smart and inquisitive and really better informed than we ever were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dr. John Duffy is here. His website has almost the same exact name as he does. It's drjohnduffy.com. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200 will get that done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Dr. John Duffy is here. I'm loving your podcasts. You can find them on your website, drjohnduffy.com, and also wgnplus.com.
Correct. Yes.
And we have a question from a listener. How should we respond when teenagers ask us about sex, drugs, et cetera, in our own choices and experiences? So if they, a lot of times kids goes, did you ever drink before you were 21? Did you ever smoke pot?
And what I hear from parents all the time is, no way am I going to share that experience with them. I'm not, because I think I'm giving them tacit, you know, permission to go ahead and do that. My experience would suggest otherwise. The kids are just really inquisitive, really want to know, and they hear about this stuff. They hear about pot. They hear about drinking. So they really want to know. So my strong bias, and different people sitting in this chair might disagree, is let them know what your experiences were. But if there was a downside to them, let them know that as well, you know? And if you feel like, I think you're too young for this, I don't think this is a good idea for you, say that too. But let them know, you know, kind of the 360-degree view of what you went through, how you feel about it, because they're going to want to know. And if you don't talk to them about it, somebody's going to.
But in a weird way, isn't there a justification where if you're a kid and you're teetering on the idea of maybe experimenting, you go, well, my mom did it, my dad did it.
Right.
I guess I have to do it. I guess it's my time to try it. There's some element of that, isn't
there? There is, although parents have more sway than they know over kids' behavior.
Yeah.
And there's research to support this, because a lot of parents will tell me, I don't think that's true. I think peers probably by far have more sway. But the truth of the matter is, our beliefs, the things that we've been kind of instilling in them since they were very small,
right.
They know our lectures. They know every, you know, kind of moral, ethical thought in our head. If you took any kid off the street and you said, how do you think your parents feel about you smoking pot, even though, you know, they did when they were 15?
Right.
They're going to know the answer.
Sure,
to
of course.
You know,
yeah.
And they'll honor that to some extent. Does talking about it mean your child's never going to try anything? No. But they'll be more informed about it, you know, and that's really what you want, you know, because it's kids experiment with a lot, probably more than we did a generation ago.
Yeah.
They're also smart about it, you know. They don't drink and drive. They take care of each other if they're using something. You know, I'm not saying that this is all great news and we don't want our kids to be abusing drugs of any kind. But if that eventuality takes place, you want your voice in their head, or at least one of the voices in their head, when they're making those calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people, though, a lot of parents will say, you know, you don't, it's such a different time now, and you don't want to be your kid's friend But you do want to have discussions with them that our parents would never have with us. Right. There was always like, fear your parents. I don't believe in the fear your parents. Respect your parents, but do you have to fear them?
No. No, I think a generation ago, there was something about that that worked, you know, that the wait till your father gets home thing, that worked on me, you know? If you told my kid, you know, wait till your father gets home, he'd be like, yeah, okay, let's see what he's that's going to be great. Uh-huh. you know, so I don't think fear is what we're looking for anymore. I think we're looking for connection. And no, we don't want to be our kids' best friends, but a lot of people overcorrect and they become adversaries with their teenagers, and they miss all the good stuff. And instead of being allies and guides and consultants for them, they become adversarial, and they become the police, and they're drug testing, and they're tracking iPhones, and they're asking a million questions when that kid comes home at night. And that becomes adversarial. And the kid's inclination naturally is, ooh, I'm going to stay away from
mom and dad. I'm going to
clam up. I'm clamming up, man. I'm not telling them anything, you know? And that's the last thing we want, because they need us as guides during this time. It's different than it was when we were kids.
John, I don't know if it's like this for all couples, but with my wife and I, we never formally said, hey, you tell the girls about this and you tell them about this. It just kind of automatically happened. There were just certain things that I think my wife was better suited to talking to them about, and then better things that I was better suited. But does it usually go, Wendy and I have talked about this a couple times, does it usually go that the father usually tells boys certain things and the mother usually tells girls because it seems more comfortable?
I've told my boys everything. Jim will not talk.
He just won't.
He goes to the health club.
Oh.
I got to go.
Oh.
Phone rings. Got to go. He is not comfortable, and it's weird talking to boys, but again, it's not weird anymore.
Right. It's way more weird for parents than it is for kids. I think more often than not, it runs along gender lines.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's a comfort level, but more for us, to your point, Wendy, than it is for the kids. The kids can live with, you know, boys can live with hearing from their mom. Girls can live with hearing from their dad. It's about our comfort level. The important thing is that we have the discussions and that they're ongoing, you know, that, you know, it's not just like one and done. It's like, hey, I'm open. You can talk to me about this anytime. And I found that the best precursor to these things is to acknowledge, like, this is really awkward, isn't it? This is weird to talk about for the two of us, but let's get through it because this is important too.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And my mom never talked about sex, ever. I was told anyone who was fat was having a baby and God made you pregnant.
Oh.
So I thought, like, everybody was pregnant, you know?
Wow.
And then my dad sat me down. He died when I was 10. This had to have been right after I started reading. And I'll never forget, he had this little book that he said, read this to me. And it's like, oh, come on. And it was about getting your period for the first time. And it's like, I don't want to read this with you. And he's like, just read the book. Read it out loud. He was losing his eyesight, bad diabetic at the time. I read him the book. He goes, do you have any questions? I'm like, no. Can I go now? But I'll never forget that.
I was going to say, here we are, you know, just a few years later, of course. And and you remember it. It's indelible, right? I mean, you know, that he was open to talking about that with you a generation back.
Yeah.
That's profound,
my mom,
right?
No way.
Right.
No
right.
way.
Interesting, right? So I think the more open and available we are to talking to our kids about this stuff, the better off we are. And maybe to your point, we're creating some memory for them that they're gonna that they'll hold, and maybe that will affect a generation beyond us.
Yeah.
We're not gonna have much time, but I want Mary to get at least one answer to a question. Mary, very quickly, Dr. John Duffy in the studio. Did you have a question?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Duffy.
Hi, Mary.
I am just gonna kind of. I have a situation that is just. Devastating to a level to my husband and I, my son. But I have a college son, and we have always talked openly about everything from drinking to sex to everything. Our whole family is like that. And this kid goes off to college, and we talked about, you know, drinking. We talked about sex. And I thought I had this responsible kid. 2 weeks ago, and he is responsible, but 2 weeks ago he calls us and he tells us that he went and got tested for an STD. The doctor said, you want me to test you for herpes as well? And he said, okay, even though he's never had any symptoms. So that herpes test came back positive for herpes 2, which is genital herpes. I've learned more about herpes than I care to know. My anger towards it is that he shouldn't have been tested without symptoms. The studies all say don't test them because it's just emotional. It makes him an emotional wreck at school. I feel like I let this kid down because I did not realize how rampant herpes is.
How did you let him down, Mary? You discussed this.
Well, I feel like, you know, we had this open open conversation always, and I just didn't know. I didn't realize. I knew that these kids were all, you know, they're having sex. I didn't, you know, you warn them about STDs, and I didn't realize that this herpes, I mean, some of these statistics, it's showing that people are like 80, 90% would test positive for herpes 2 without having any symptoms.
Well, Mary, my first thought is to get you off the hook. I agree with Wendy. It certainly doesn't feel like you let him down. It sounds like you've had a really open discussion with him. And these things happen. So my bias would be, instead of looking at this as kind of like, okay, this is the end of the process, he has herpes, and somehow we've failed something, to continue talking. You've kind of laid this foundation, and something is bound to go wrong. Most of us who've had kids go off to college, there's been some bump in the road that's unanticipated, and you've got this strong foundation and the emotional bank account with him, and you can continue talking to him and revisit this. And now that you know a little bit more about herpes, maybe more than you want to know, you can get back into that discussion, and you've got the groundwork where he's not going to clam up on you. He's going to be open to talking. So I continue doing what you've been doing.
Yeah. So I guess here was my question then, because, I mean, herpes, you have it for life. And so my question is, he is like devastated. He's not going to ever date. He's not going to be able to find a girlfriend. He's not got through, you know, he's like, I'm not going to get married. Who's going to want me?
Yeah.
And
I bet that's a common feeling for people who get herpes.
It is, especially initially. You feel like nobody
talks about it.
Right, right.
So how long do I let him kind of sit in that before I want to go, hey, now we're done feeling sorry for ourselves, and now we have to move on?
Not long. I think you're probably already there, and my bias would be that he, if he is on a campus somewhere, that he go to the CAPS program, Counseling and Psych Services, and talk to somebody there who has been through this many, many, many times and will normalize this for him very, very quickly so that he can move on with his life and he doesn't feel limited in the way that you're describing.
Mary, we got to let you go. We got to hit news. Good luck. And, you know.
Wendy, what will you say? One more thing for everyone listening. This is a kid who had protected sex 5 times.
Oh.
So it can happen to anybody. So warn your kids.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks,
Mary. We appreciate it. Good luck.
And John, if I can recommend a book I wrote years ago, Slurpees, Not Herpes, I think it's a very helpful guide to kids who are in this situation.
DrJohnDuffy.com, that's where you find him. His book, The Available Parent, is awesome. Podcasts on DrJohnDuffy.com and at WGNplus.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, John. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and I am honored to introduce to all of you a friend of mine, a friend of everyone who listened to Chicago Radio, Rob S., Bobby Skafish, Daddy-O. How are you, sir?
I'm good. So nice to see you again and to meet Bill, actually, for the first time.
It's
very
a thrill,
cool.
Isn't it? It's kind of a thrill.
It's electric, yeah.
I've heard your voice a million times. It's so weird to see it coming out of a human being. Okay. I know that sounds like a weird thing, but really, Bobby, it's
I'll
so
take
great.
It.
Yeah.
Well, XRT listened to you there all the time. Then you came to The Loop, and I was working at The Loop overnights at the time and was honored to meet you. I was very nervous when I met you for the first time. And then on The Drive, why are you not on the radio right now? Why aren't you on satellite?
I don't know.
You are amazing.
Bless you. You know, I appreciate that, but I sunk all my energy into this book shortly after the Drive thing ended.
Yeah.
They canned me in June of last year, and by August I was writing. So that's my focus. Radio's not my focus. The book thing is, I just want as many people as possible to at least hear about it, and that's why I'm here right now.
We have company, 4 decades of rock and roll encounters. I love the pictures of you with various people, some fantastic interviews. mention some of the who's who that you interviewed.
Yeah.
And the who.
Yeah. You get to watch me age because the pictures are all laid out chronologically. So that's nice.
That hurts a little, doesn't it, when you have it like that?
What the hey.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
But name names. Go through some of it because it's an extensive list of everybody who's been in music that you've spoken with over 40 plus years.
Okay. Clash, David Bowie.
David Bowie, how was he?
He would be in my top 1%.
Yep.
Very classy. We did a phone interview while I worked at the Loop, and that was great, fantastic. And then I met him for a photo op after a concert. I was with Emily, my wife. He played the Aragon, and afterwards there was a photo opportunity with different radio people. And his talent is he put everyone at ease. Everyone was nervous being around David Bowie, and he made all of us feel like, you know, we're at his house and gee, do you need a Coke? And, you know, it's like he was super, super sweet. And that's what blew me away. That's what good manners really is, I think, making other people feel comfortable in your presence. And he was that. He didn't pull a Star Trip at all.
That's awesome.
So he was one of the good guys. Give us one or two of the bad guys.
I knew this would come.
Who are you?
And I'm not going to go there.
No.
I'm just not, because what could be a mediocre or a poor situation, that could be half my fault or more.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. Yeah, and also the situation. I'm almost astonished that musicians of the day of a concert, that their focus should be on, you know, 9 p.m. when they hit the stage, that they have to be trotted out to interviews. And, you know, especially when I was working at XRT, Belmont and Cicero out in the sticks, and someone would have to truck out on bad Saturday traffic to, you know, we were lowly rated, let's say, at the time, to do a little conversation. That's a hard day. So if anyone was not 100% into it, I get that. So I don't really cast stones at someone who was less than fantastic
sure.
in that situation.
To listen to you say that maybe some of it was your fault, I would like to just attribute it to maybe it was a bad day for that particular
yeah,
person.
Exactly.
But I got to commend you on your interview technique. When I was at the Loop working with you, there was a short-lived show called 90s at 9 that came on, and we would focus on 90s music. And I got to do the music news segment, and that involved interviewing some people. And I wasn't really that great at interviewing people because I didn't do it very often.
No one teaches you, really.
You taught me. Oh. And I have to tell, and Bill, I've brought Bobby Scafish's
many
name
times.
Up so many times off the air, and I'm going to do it on the air. You know, the great interviewer has some key questions ready, and you have done your homework, your research, and you're ready to roll. But you put that question out there, and you listen to the responses, because what you can glean from their response is a whole different interview than what you had planned on paper.
I agree with that. And it can happen that the interviewer is, first of all, like maybe a little starstruck or blown away that Joe Blow, the famous rock star, is in the same room with them, and you want to impress them, and you also are so busy thinking up your next zinger of a question that you're not listening to the previous answer. So I feel like I learned by doing that. I wasn't so hot at it when I started out. No one really taught me. So, you know, just they keep throwing assignments at you, and you finally get the hang of it.
Well, you've mastered it, and you can read it in this book. We have company 4 decades of rock and roll encounters, more than 80 of the greatest artists in rock and roll history. You are going to be having a book release party. Right now, it's just a pre-order, right? The book isn't physically available just yet?
Yeah. It comes out on September 26th. Right now, you can pre-order it at bobbyscafish.com. So out on the 26th, and you mentioned the book release party. I'm calling it a book release open house. Because I was thinking in terms of sort of like a program to set up, but I just want people to drift by over a 4-hour space, September 30th at Tunes. It's in Wrigleyville, corner of Southport and Byron, 5 to 9 p.m. You can come for a little while, buy a book, get it signed, hang out, hear some music, just say hi, clink a few glasses. It's not like you have to be there at the crack of 5 when it begins. If you can come by, great.
And you don't want people to stay the full 4 hours, do you?
Like, I think Tunes would like it.
Yes, yes. Should we take a quick break?
Yeah, a quick break and then more with Bobby Scafish. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's Bobby Scafish. Bobby, I got to tell you, first of all, the book is We Have Company, Four Decades of Rock and Roll Encounters, some of the best interviews with some of the greatest people in the rock and roll business. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks.
Something else I want to congratulate you on, and Rick Kempfer is here. He's from Eckhart Press, which is publishing this book. And Rick, I go back a long time with you in radio as well. There was a system at most of the radio stations. Was WXRT mostly albums, or did you have cartridges there as well?
Mostly albums, converting to mostly CDs, converting to music files, audio vault, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, the loop had walls and walls of, it looked like an 8-track tape, but there was just one song per cartridge cart. And we would get in there, and there'd be a computerized printout of some of the music we had to play, and we'd get our music ready. And no one on earth could remember the numbers like you could.
No.
The cart numbers, like I almost want to ask you if you can remember, there was a Bad Company that was around 1309 in the system. 2776 is popping to my mind. Can you remember some of these?
Yeah, I think Refugee by Tom Petty was like 1001.
Yes. It was.
This is super obscure, but yeah, thanks for bringing it up.
We used to have little contests, you know, like, oh, we would talk about a song and he would go, oh, you mean cart number 1307?
Sure.
It's like, yes, we would.
Bobby, I know you've been in this business for 40 plus years, so I respect your opinion. Can anybody make the argument that there's ever been a band as important as the Beatles?
I'd say no.
It's impossible, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because the period in between, say, Elvis getting drafted and Buddy Holly going into dying, rather, and those fallow years, you know, until the Beatles came out, it was really pretty grim there. It's like teen idols. So the Beatles, and then the whole British invasion that came with them, super important, of course.
Yeah. But you'll get from time to time somebody will try to tell you that the Rolling Stones are more important or better, or that the Guess Who is more important or better.
Right.
They'll just pull out a band and go, oh, the Bay City Rollers, that's the band that changed music. But it's the Beatles. I mean, you don't even try.
I would agree with what you said there. Yeah, Bill.
Thank you.
See, I've been in arguments with the Beatles, Rolling Stones, who met more, and then I would be like, yeah, the Rolling Stones had more of a diversified approach, but then you think of just the short time that the Beatles had together, it's pretty phenomenal what they put out in that short time.
Yeah, I mean, the Beatles led the way, I think, for the whole British invasion. You know, the Stones kind of followed in their footsteps. The Beatles kind of blazed the trail in the United States, I think.
Are you happy with the way music has turned out? It's so digital now, and you can download a song in a matter of seconds. Did you ever think we'd see anything like this in your lifetime?
No, I didn't. When you mention digital music, my pet peeve would be that you don't get, except in occasional cases, you don't get the liner notes.
Oh, I love that. The best part of an album.
Yeah, you download the songs nowadays, but I think that has contributed to the decline of music, actually, that when we were younger, we would pore over the album notes. You knew what studio it was recorded in and who played bass and the whole routine. And now you just get songs. And I think there's a lot missing because of that.
We talked to Val Camaletti a lot, Val's Hala.
Oh, yeah.
And she, it's the same thing. It's like it was an event to get an album and you opened it and you looked at the liner notes and everything it was like a new present you got. And then you put it out on a shelf like a trophy, like you would a book, because it told the story and it meant something to you. I don't think there's that connection with digital music.
Absolutely.
All right, so your love of music goes way back to your early childhood. It was fascinating to read that in this book, which is called We Have Company, Four Decades of Rock and Roll Encounters. Music was a big part of your upbringing.
Yeah, I was lucky there. Youngest of five, so all my older brothers and sisters were already into it. My mom was sweet enough to, you know, like, let us play WLS radio back when it was the only game in town, even pre-Beatle era. And then once the Beatles hit, we're seeing all this stuff on Ed Sullivan. So, yeah, I think having four older siblings really put me in the right position there.
What? Didn't your mom take you to a concert?
1966, the old McCormick place that burned down about a year later, it was the Rolling Stones, the McCoys of Hang On Sloopy fame, the Standells of Dirty Water fame, and a band called the Tradewinds. at McCormick Place. The tickets were, it was in three price ranges, $450, $550, and $650.
Oh, my God.
Which is like a down payment on the service charge nowadays, you know.
Right.
But,
the convenience fee.
Yeah, yeah.
They call it a convenience fee.
Yeah, so we went, and that was my first concert. It was super exciting, you know.
How cool is your mom?
Extremely. In heaven now, but yeah, extremely cool.
But to take you and all the siblings went?
No, my two sisters and some of their friends.
They were too cool? I'm sorry.
My older brothers, I don't know what, you know, they might have been at that point, working in school, doing God knows what, but it was me and a bunch of girls, and that was fine.
Bobby, in the book, there are, as we mentioned, some of the greats of rock and roll history, but who has eluded you? Who were you not able to interview that you would have just loved to have talked to?
You know, in my opinion, there's a whole parallel universe of artists that I didn't cover. I mean, you could just think about it and make your own list. Brian Wilson, Van Morrison, Joni Mitchell, Randy Newman, just... Well, I have two Rolling Stones, so that doesn't count. But you could create your own parallel universe, I think.
Yeah.
And Never Say Never on some of the ones that are still alive. Volume 2 might be coming out.
They want to come over, have some lemonade, we can talk, I guess.
Doors open. All right. Yeah. That seems nice.
Yeah. Speaking of the doors open, again, the open house is happening Friday, September 30th. Put that down on your calendars now and set a reminder on your iPhone or you're going to forget about it. You want to go meet the legendary rock and roll god, really the quintessential interviewer, Bobby Skafish.
And you still sound great. I mean, I know a lot of us as we get older, our voice, you sound like you sounded in your prime forever.
Thank
you.
Just, I appreciate
that. You're pulling that off beautifully.
Thanks.
And really, to put personality into a small little break in between music, you've done a great job. Just really proud of you.
Thanks.
So Tunes on Friday, September 30th. I gave the date, but I didn't give the location, so why don't you help me out with that?
I don't have the street address. It is on Southport at Byron. So if I would guess, I'd say 3856 Southport.
I got to check now because if you, it's any indication.
Don't show up at the cleaners next door in case I got that wrong.
Any indication on the cart numbers you remembered for all the songs, I bet you're right.
That should have been the book, Bobby, is you just rattling off cart numbers.
Yeah. Actually, Wendy, one just came to me. 2252 was Synchronicity 2 by the Police. Yeah.
All right, what did you say address-wise?
I guessed 3856.
Many miles away.
Is that it?
You are one off.
Okay.
3857 North Southport.
That's right. It's on that side of the street. Okay.
Off by one.
So nice joint.
Cart numbers, yes. Addresses, not as much, right? All right. That's all right. That's all right.
All right. So get the book. It's awesome. It's such a great read. It's really hard to put down. It really is. We have company four decades of rock and roll encounters. Bobby Skafish, go to Tunes at 3857 North Southport, Friday, September 30th from 5 to 9. Just a little open house. Come in, go
out,
stick around, or go to your website.
Yeah, bobbyskafish.com to order the book now. Yeah.
Thank you, Bobby. Sure. Appreciate you being here.
God, I appreciate
Steve
this so much.
Steve Gertrude, you're in awe, aren't you?
I'm totally starstruck.
Yep. How about this? Daddy-O is here. Thank you so much. Nice
Bless
to
you.
See you, Rob.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bobby. A quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve has planned on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I think
Kim just illustrated a good point. We live in such a specific world. You just need to know it's hot and it's wet out. You don't need to know the specifics. You don't need to know. Your life won't change dramatically if Kim is off by a degree or two.
No, but hot is relative. To some, hot is 80. To some, hot is 110.
Well, and we pretty much have that because it's in the 80s with the heat index approaching 100. So.
Right. And it's wet, so it's really wet.
I was outside when the first raindrops fall. Thank you, Freddie Fender. I'll be there before the next teardrop
falls.
That
is Freddie Fender. Very nicely played.
And it just was coming very sporadically. I came inside, looked out the window, and just downpour central.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of women out on Michigan Avenue that have a table set up. I am trying so hard to avoid them.
I think they're having a rummage sale.
No,
aren't they?
Not.
I think they are. Because that's the kind of card table I always equate with
rummage
sales.
I thought they were giving
out
like breakfast bars or something, but I didn't want to get that close either.
No.
It has something to do with
Are they the animals?
Pets. Yeah, I know there's. It has something to do with healthy pets.
Well, it's about, you know, don't give in to dog fights, which I am not a fan of.
Right.
But I they just have
few
pamphlets.
People are, I think. I don't know
Michael
how.
Michael Vick the, is the only one
right.
I can think of.
I haven't seen them convince anybody as they've walked past Michigan Avenue. Wow, I was a huge fan of dogfights, and now that I've talked to you guys, I'm kind of against them. I haven't seen that at all.
Well, we were questioning whether or not it's legal or customary to just go out on Michigan Avenue in front of the Tribune Tower and just put a card table up and start doing your thing.
I'm sure they have to have some sort of a city permit, right? Because there's been a lot... Michigan Avenue has police all over the place the last couple of months, so I'm sure somebody would have called them out if they didn't. But the point is, those ladies are very, very wet right now because they were not anticipating the rain.
But look, it's already stopped.
Right. That's how quickly
and
things happen,
out.
Kim.
Yeah. Look at
the
that.
The sun will come out
oh.
in 2 minutes.
Right. That's right. Hey, you know who I'm concerned about, Wendy? I'm concerned about Taylor Swift.
Tay-Tay, what's going on?
Yeah. Well, you know, she is. She seems to fall in love a lot. Did you notice that about Taylor Swift? She keeps falling in love with guys, and every time she falls in love with them, you think, well, finally, Taylor Swift is happy. She's met a guy, and she loves him, and good for them. Well, she just had a romance with Tom Hiddleston. Do you know who that is?
Yes.
He's Loki.
Yes, and isn't he rumored to be the next Bond, or is he already out of the running?
He is. There's a short list that keeps going around that everybody...
Are you on it?
I'm also on the list. I am also on that list. I'd be the more casual of the James Bonds. Few of the James Bonds have worn cargo shorts and polo shirts.
But see, I'd like to see that's like...
More realistic.
Know, the other side of James Bond.
Right.
Right. A club soda shaken, not
yeah,
stirred.
Yeah, I
no,
wouldn't drink a martini.
It.
I would just have a club soda. I wouldn't fight with guys. Like, James Bond's always fighting with guys. I would just go, guys, come on, be more considerate.
Would you have hot leading ladies all around you?
Yeah, I'd keep that going. That's the one thing I would say. Look, that's tradition. I don't want to mess with tradition.
You got to leave something the same.
There should be some constant in the James Bond universe. But Taylor Swift has been dating Tom Hiddleston for 3 months, and everybody said, well, this is it. She finally found somebody who appreciates her and loves her. And now I'm reading today that they have, I was going to say split up, but it said on the internet that they're in Splitsville, which I think is in Tennessee.
She dumped him.
That's what I'm hearing.
It turns out all you need is 3 months to write a song.
Do you think she's using these guys to just write songs?
But didn't I read somewhere that she doesn't have premarital sex? Or did I not read that? Am I just thinking
all
that?
Right.
Because she's had a lot of boyfriends, and everybody keeps busting her on that.
Right.
Even if she does have premarital sex, why should she not be able to try and find the perfect one? It's a man-woman thing.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine about this a couple of weeks ago, and here's what we came up with. I said, I really like Taylor Swift. I think
I do
she's
too, and
very
I don't
talented.
Like her.
Why don't you want to like her?
Because she...
Because why?
She is gimmicky and... I don't know. I just was not, I didn't want to like her, but I like her voice. I like her songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's adorbs.
Mm-hmm. That's kid talk for adorable, isn't it?
Thank you.
You're
yes.
You're welcome.
I'm a tween now.
I don't want to like her because I feel guilty in liking somebody that young. I think she's only like 23 or 24 years old. And I feel like
she's
I should.
She's legal?
No, it's not that. I'm not expecting anything to come of it. Although we are looking for Bond girls. I would accept her as one of my Bond girls. She's in. Taylor, if you're listening, sign up. We've got openings in the Bond girl department.
Except there is no movie. We have to tell her that.
There's always a complication. All right. But now here's what I thought about. She has dated over the last couple of years. She's dated roughly 15 or 20 guys semi-seriously where everybody goes, this is the one. Harry Styles. This is the one. Jake Gyllenhaal? No, this is the one. Tom Hiddleston? No, wait, this is the one. John Mayer? No, that's the one.
Who says that is the one? I have never cared.
If
I have
you
never...
look at any of the tabloids, like, you know, the ones that are in Jewel as you're checking out, or even if you go online, they make up nicknames for them right away. They combine their names. This one was called Hiddleswift, which I think is also in Harry Potter. I think that's one of the schools in Harry Potter. But I keep thinking, maybe it's her. Maybe she, you know how, I know this is a weird comparison. Actually, it's not a weird comparison. Do you know anybody who's been married a lot of times?
No.
I know two people have been married a lot of times.
Like what institutes?
Four times. They're our age, but they've been married four times. So to me,
fourth time's a charm.
No, I think if you've been married that many times, it's you. It's not the you're not marrying the wrong people. You're the wrong person.
Maybe you're picking the wrong people.
No, but that's what I mean. But that comes back to the person who keeps getting married. Don't you blame them?
I don't blame anyone. I don't really care. I just know if I wasn't married, if I'm not married anymore tomorrow, I'm not getting married again.
I know what you're saying, Bill. I'll play along.
Steve brings up a good point. Because, no, but you know what I mean, right? If you've got a, all right, let's take Mickey Rooney, because he was married 8 or 9 times.
Look at him.
Well, now he's dead.
I'm surprised he even got married once.
There was a time where Mickey was a catch.
Are you kidding?
He was one of Hollywood's most bankable stars.
Unfortunately, he was always under the limit. He had to throw him back.
All right, there's that. There's that. Don't you say to yourself, I don't think the problem was all the women Mickey married over the years. The problem was probably Mickey, right?
Yeah,
he was probably the one. So don't you think that maybe with Taylor Swift, if she keeps dating all these guys over and over and over, don't you go, maybe it is Taylor Swift who's the problem? Maybe she just can't figure out how to make a relationship. And I know she's busy. She's got touring and she's got hit albums and stuff, but... I just, you know, but on the other side, she's like 23 or 24 years old. So you go, I know people who are 23 and 24 and they can't find the right guy. Why should Taylor Swift be able to find the right guy?
And if it was a guy and they dated 15 girls, would you be talking about it?
Depends on who they were.
Oh my God.
If it was a big star, I mean, she's one of the biggest stars in show business, right? So you say, so you go, Why couldn't there be something working between her and some guy? Like Tom Hiddleston's a good guy.
I think you just answered it, because she is one of the biggest celebrities. Maybe there's some competition going on.
Oh, maybe. I just worry. I don't know if she'll ever find happiness.
Didn't she buy a house to move by closer to the Kennedys?
Yeah, she was dating... is it Peter Lawford's grandson? I think that's who she was dating.
I don't know, Bill. You're president of her one fan of the, club. You should know all this.
I have 2 fan sites. It doesn't make me president of her fan club. I devote most, if not all, my free time to my fan site.
312, no one ever talks about all the women male celebrities date.
I just said Mickey Rooney. I know we're going back to the 40s. But he was the last serial...
Well, okay, you brought up John Mayer. People pretty much...
John Mayer's a perfect example. That guy's been around.
They blame him because they say he's, you know... Difficult.
He's busy. Right. He's touring with the Dead now. He's busy.
But even if you're, let's say you're the busiest person in the world, you'd still find time for love, wouldn't you? What's more important? I would even say, you know, I've been working too much. I'm going to spend more time. I would say this out loud. I'm going to spend more time on you, I would say. That's my advice to John Mayer. And you cannot be a Don girl, John Mayer, so don't even hand in an application.
He should be in the remake of The Incredible Mr. Limpet because he has fish lips.
See, now that's the kind of thing that's going to scratch you off his dating list.
I don't care.
You will not be dating him.
Maybe that's why girls date him. He's got the fish lips.
But Steve.
I like how Wendy comes down on you for saying that Taylor Swift can't keep a boyfriend, but she can call some guy fish
lips.
Yeah,
you can't call John Mayer fish
lips.
That's
maybe that's a
fish.
Good thing.
That's not nice to fish.
But I mean, you're not talking about how he breaks up with people. It's...
No, but people have. I have.
Sure, we have. Yeah.
Like when
we
Jennifer Aniston,
Bill, you and I,
Steve
were
and I got together yesterday. We were like, "What's going on with John Mayer? Why can't he find a girl?"
John,
Jennifer Aniston at the time. You go, boy, that's a catch. Fish lips. Speaking, keeping with the theme of the sea.
Yeah, but you know, she's got some baggage too, and
what's her baggage? I'm curious what her baggage is.
Who was she supposed? Was it Brad Pitt that they were
no.
the?
Oh no, she was never with Brad Pitt.
Who was she with?
Oh, Jennifer Aniston. Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant Taylor Swift.
We've gone back to Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston. Well, she's a smoker, so that's bad
for you.
Right. Maybe that's what broke them up. She had Tarantins going all the time.
Maybe.
I get it. I understand it.
It's just, it's hard to have, these are huge careers. And
right.
It's hard to have a career when you're in the limelight like they are.
But I would put my love life first and
then
my career second.
Then you wouldn't be a very successful actor, would you?
Nope. But wouldn't you trade the personal happiness for that
you
kind
can
of
have
success?
Both.
Like Taylor Swift is set for life. Like if she never worked again, she's got millions and millions of dollars.
It's not all about money. She likes doing what she's doing.
Right.
Look at Joanne Woodward and Paul Newman.
Right.
They were able to...
Do both.
Yeah. You can have both.
Right.
They're young.
Yeah.
Quit getting her married.
I worry about her. I want her to be happy.
She'll be fine.
I hope she is.
Tay-Tay.
Is that what her name is?
I think so.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll solve more problems for people. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. This is Marianne's show business report to the nation. We've already tried to tell you about Taylor Swift and how she just can't seem to find happiness. It's making me, I'm losing sleep over it.
Taylor will be 27 in December, says 630.
Is she that old? I didn't know that.
But realistically, 13 on an emotional level. That's not fair, you guys. She's still young.
Yep, she is.
630 Bill, I've been married 3 times, made some bad choices, counseling help. My third husband and I have been married for 25 years in October. He's the best.
I like to hear that. That's a happy ending.
When a man...
Which costs extra.
What's happened to you? Really, what's happened to you?
Some bad fish.
When a man does it, he's a playa.
Yeah.
When a girl does it, it's something different.
Oh. What is it?
Really? What happens to you for the second half of the show?
I'm just curious. I don't know.
All right, I don't know. Somebody mentioned George Clooney used to be a cad as well.
George Clooney was married fairly young to an actress named Talia Balsam. So they were married to a little while. That's Martin Balsam's daughter. And then...
from Adam 12?
No, that's Martin Milner.
Well, you throw these things out like everybody knows them.
It's just a little background. So they were married not for a very long time. And then George Clooney said, I'm never going to get married again. Marriage is not for me. And he dated some very attractive ladies over the years and then found one that he fell in love with. So he lied to us. Clooney's a liar. Can't trust Clooney.
I know a couple that were married on their 5th time. Each 5th marriage is for man and woman. So what does that mean? Counselor Bill?
Well, Bill wasn't saying they're terrible people. He's just saying if you're...
They're not good at being married.
Right. It could be them. It's not 5 people who were bad choices. They made 5 bad choices.
One of my best friends is 2 years older than me. He has been married 4 times. And each time he says almost the same thing. Look, my past is my past. I didn't know what I was doing. But now I have found the one. And myself and all of our other friends just smile politely and we shake our heads. And then
in
a year when he says, that one didn't work out, we all just go, yeah, well, keep looking.
See, that's my question. Why even bother getting married then?
I can't figure it out. I don't know.
It's not, I mean, in the old days, you know, you would get married and then you'd move in together and then you'd have a kid. People are doing things in all different orders now.
Can I tell you what he told me? And this makes sense. Not when you hear it, but when you think about it from his standpoint, this makes sense. He said to me once, because I said, "Why?" This was after the 3rd one failed. The 4th one just failed a year ago. I said, "What? Why do you think these marriages don't last?" And he said, "You know what I think it is? I think I'm in love with falling in love." And that's
makes
it.
Makes a lot of sense.
Right? There's some kind of an adrenaline rush from that part of it. But the key is maintaining that throughout the rest of your relationship and marriage. And he just doesn't have that in him. He doesn't make it last beyond that.
Poor guy.
But he's not, like Steve said, he's not, I don't think he's a bad guy, but I would just...
Well, you sound like you're judging him.
I'm not judging him so much as using him as an example of...
Does he listen?
No,
but it's like if you can't shoot a free throw, you'd say, you know what, stop shooting free throws.
Right, Shaquille O'Neal.
Doesn't make you a bad guy or a bad girl. It's just like, that's not what you're good at.
Why didn't he stop shooting free throws? He shouldn't have even attempted it.
I know. People on his own team were following him at the end. I just want to see him at the free throw line.
Well, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. Steven
that
still
should be a song.
It.
Oh, it already is a song.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, coming up after the news, we are going to talk to a former SWAT team member, 17 years. He was part of a SWAT team. He led countless drug raids, hostage situations, and he was on the front lines of the Columbine massacre.
He was the first officer in there in Columbine when that took place.
First SWAT officer inside Columbine and beyond. Bullet Riddled is his book, and we're going to talk to him after the news. Sound like a plan?
It sounds great.
I wonder how many times he's been married.
I'm going to ask him that. I won't ask him that at the beginning, but toward the end, I'll ask him that.
Can't wait.
All right, stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder. Steve, whenever you do news and there are emergency situations and it's mentioned in the news that a SWAT team has been called, I'm amazed at the talent of these individuals. And on the line with us right now, a 26-year veteran of the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office in the Denver, Colorado area, retired as a sergeant, 17 years on the SWAT team, and he's written a book called Bullet Riddled. And Grant Whitus on the line with us. Hi, Grant.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
We've been looking through the book Bullet Riddled, the first SWAT officer inside Columbine and beyond. Some pretty graphic pictures in this book. And, you know, I don't want to forget Columbine, but sometimes I forget some of the facts. I forgot that they had bombs that they made, the two boys involved. Why don't you refresh our memory and then say what you found when you arrived that day?
Sure. As you read it, obviously, it brings so many interesting new points that nobody ever had an idea because we'd never talked before then. But you're right. As we were going in, we knew there were several people shot and several bombs that went off. And even some of the teenagers, the students that were hurt, were hit with bomb fragments. So as we were going through the window, they broke the window and I got into the cafeteria area. I fully expected to be in a firefight. And even bombs to go off. So to be in a firefighter, we got the equipment for that. But we really weren't prepared to take on these bombs. I've never seen that prior to Columbine. And of course, now we've seen it in some of these other mass murders in the future.
Grant, at that stage, when you guys get the call to go in, you have no idea how many people you're up against, correct?
We don't. That's true. And it, like we read in the book, in hindsight, there's two, but when we went in, we thought we were fighting 7 to 9 of them. So it was so slow moving through there because every room we came to, we found, you know, 20 or 30 students. We had to evacuate them because we didn't want the bomb to go off and have everybody die. So it was just slow moving through the school. We got upstairs in the science room. We worked on the teacher until he died. And then, of course, the library was right across there. Not knowing, the most casualties were in the library. So I made entry in there. Actually, one girl was still alive we've never talked about, and she's never talked. And then I found the shooters in the back corner. The interesting part about that was, you know, that was just two of them. So we thought we still had 5 or 7 left to find. And it really didn't end until we cleared the whole school and there were no more.
When you think about it, first responders to things like this don't exactly know how many shooters or what's going on. And so a lot of times when you guys get there, the SWAT team, you're walking into it blindly, aren't you?
We did. You know, it gets so convoluted with so many people calling in and the different information that's given. Like Columbine, we had no idea if it was a library. You know, it was a science room. We had reports of them clear across the other side of the school. So that's why they were telling us we think there's 7 to 9 of them shooting in there. And every time there's something like this in a mass shooting, all the information is kind of similar to that. It's like we call it the fog of war because you don't really know what you're stepping into.
So, Grant, to what extent are you benefited by technology? Like in a situation, as time has gone on, now this was 17 years ago, so there was some...
Wow, 17
yeah,
years already.
1999. So there was some cell phone usage. It wasn't like it is today where everybody has a cell phone, but how are you using that knowledge to help stop any kind of an aggravated situation?
Well, you know, it is worse today, like you said, because every student's got one, and the phone calls come in like that. So, you know, it really is not a help to us, other than we can kind of identify from which call and the noises that are coming in, meaning the shooting and where it's coming from and where that student might be. That's the only help. Now, you know, it truly comes down to, you know, the weapons have gotten a little bit better. Certainly the ballistic shields and the bulletproof vests have gotten better. But you still need a group of men and the first responders to get a gun on and go inside there and get to work. And, you know, that's what's changed over Columbine. What we've taught over the last 17 years is you can't wait for SWAT to show up anymore. The first officers on scene, we teach the 1- and 2-man response. That means the first officer there is going through the door and he's engaging that shooter. No more waiting for SWAT.
What do you advise people that happen to be there? Like I think of the Pulse nightclub. I mean, if you see somebody shooting, What is your advice to just other civilians standing around? Do you try and take somebody down? Do you run for cover? Do you just assess the situation when it's happening and make up your mind?
Yeah, isn't that tough? But what do I do? Because every circumstance is so different. But I teach the run, fight, hide model to all the schools and all the public places. And you know, firstly, we want them out of there. If you can get out of there, run to find a safe place. Secondly, if you can't get out of there, you're on the second, third floor or beyond, prepare to fight. As they come through the door, we teach them to take them on and use code words amongst yourselves. But you got them. If you're in a school and other teachers can come help you, students can come help. But you're going to stop them once they come into your room, because lastly, we teach that hide model. And if the, you know, if you've got a group of people hiding in a corner and he comes into that room, it's nothing more than sitting ducks like we saw in the library with Columbine. So that's the last model I teach. But now I'm telling everybody, be aware and fight for your life.
As you describe this, Sergeant Grant White is on the line with us. As you describe this about the three things that you should do, I'm just thinking of all of our kids in school right now, and I'm covered in goosebumps because it's like it shouldn't be like this.
No, you're right. It shouldn't. And if we look at it, and Columbine was just a stepping stone for all these major shootings that have happened since, because, you know, we look into them and they've got, we've got the Sandy Hook and bigger shootings even happening up into, you know, like Virginia Tech, where 32 people were shot. Now we've got the Florida incident. So Columbine was the first time that these cowards realize that they're going to get recognition for doing this. And statistically, it's a suicide mission anyway. So they want their name to live forever. And the bigger the shooting, the longer their name will live. And it's sick, actually.
So, Grant, that said, there's been a debate for the last several years that maybe we shouldn't report the names of the people involved in these shootings, the gunmen. Where do you stand on that? Do you think that it's our responsibility to say their names, or should their names not be mentioned?
I don't think their names should be mentioned. There's two ways to do it. Obviously, we got to quit saying who they are and putting out so much information, because the next sick guy says, hey, I can do it even better, I can do it even bigger, and my name will live on forever. And secondly, we've got to fight back. If these mass shootings stopped because we armed citizens and we armed, you know, teachers or a cafeteria aide or somebody that's actually going to carry a weapon and stop these shooters, they won't be successful and they'll quit doing them. But we're not doing that. If we look back to what just happened in Florida, certainly we don't want people carrying, drinking and carrying guns. But, you know, if they weren't drinking, they had weapons, this drastically could have changed that night. And the law enforcement response in Florida was very similar to Columbine. And I spent 17 years trying to change that response. So that one was disheartening for me.
But see, now, we can get into a whole gun issue, but you are trained and have been specialty trained to be on the SWAT team. You're used to having a weapon. There are people that are around here that want a weapon that maybe shouldn't have one.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I look at my career. I've shot hundreds of thousands of rounds to guns, machine guns, and it's still hard when it really happens. I'm not going to lie to you. If you read the book, I've lost. I was very honest. I had failures, successes. I just kept getting back up on my feet, even when something bad happened. And it's much harder than I can ever even explain in a book. But I want everyone to understand, law enforcement, military, EMS, that these bad things are going to happen to you. You have to get up the next day, and you have to go back to work and be better at it the next day than you were, and you'll survive it. It's just hard. And I think anybody has a weapon that's going to carry a concealed weapon here in Colorado, they're very easy to get, but I want them to train with that weapon, prepare with that weapon, and understand that they can't make a mistake with that weapon.
Grant Whitus is our guest. His book is called Bullet Riddled. He was the first SWAT officer inside Columbine. He tells that story and plenty of others. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We are talking with Grant Whitus, retired sergeant, former SWAT member, 26-year veteran of the sheriff's office in the Denver, Colorado area, 17 years on SWAT. And here's the dumbest question of ever. What does SWAT stand for?
Special Weapons and Tactics.
I knew that because I used to watch SWAT.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Steve Forrest.
Oh, that's right.
And Robert Urich.
That's an old people thing, right?
Yep.
The book is called Bullet Riddled, the first SWAT officer inside Columbine and beyond. You go, there are some great pictures in this book and some pretty intense exercises that you guys use to train to be a SWAT member. It's pretty tough, isn't it?
It is. You know, truthfully, just to get on the SWAT team, we 8 out of 10 failed our physical side, our physical test. So
8 out of 10
might go to the order board. I'm sorry.
8 out of 10 failed it.
They did. So the people getting on were coming back 2 and 3 times, trying to get back on, and we tested, you know, about once a year. So it was hard, and I wanted the best athletes and the best cops I could possibly get out of all these departments. And really, after Columbine, when I took over, the team really got fantastic. We knew what to train for physically and mentally by then, but still after the Platte Canyon shooting, you know, 7 years later after Columbine, you know, I still lost team members just because of the PTSD they suffered through Platte Canyon, just like Columbine. It was unfortunate, and I thought it prepared them better than that.
Grant, let's talk about that mental aspect for a minute. You went through Columbine, and you saw some of the most gruesome things anyone could ever imagine. So how do you leave your work at home? That's impossible, isn't it?
It is. You know, looking back at it now, and you say, I dealt with it pretty well. I mean, certainly afterwards, if you read the book, we had conflicts inside. A few days later, I started fighting with a teammate. I got suspended. And then a year later, my wife left me. So obviously those effects are not something I could see, but they were certainly there. And, you know, I thought I dealt with them so well. The team actually fractured. I took over the team. The old guys left. And like I said, I rebuilt it. And, you know, and they just kept coming. Obviously, we had the Granby tank, as you see in there, another shooting with a guy named Grumpy Fred. So I put all these incidents in there. And the toll it took on even my young SWAT members, who I thought I prepared physically, mentally so well, was just the same as Columbine.
Well, I mean, people have to understand, as with a police officer and definitely a member of the SWAT team, I mean, your job is to take away the threat, but it's not like you wake up every morning hoping you're going to shoot someone.
Oh, no. You know, certainly most law enforcement officers never, ever shoot anybody in their career. You know, it's 99%. Now, some of them don't even pull their weapons. So, you know, it's rare, and all the things I were involved in was probably, you know, one of the rarest of all careers in law enforcement, that I went through 2 school shootings and an additional mass shooting. So, you know, I was unfortunate and fortunate, depending on how you look at it. I've had, since Columbine, I've been training law enforcement officers across the United States on how to deal with this and the mistakes we made at Columbine. And now we train them that first patrolman's got to be through the door and get to them quick. We can't allow them to keep doing what they do, and we can't allow what happened at Columbine to happen again.
Patrick is on the line, and he has a question for you. Patrick, this is retired Sergeant Grant Whitus. You had a question?
Yes, Sergeant. I'm a paramedic, and I'm wondering, do you feel nationwide we've done as much to get, as we need to get EMS to the victim side as quickly as possible, considering that, you know, the majority of these people, other than suffering the head, you know, catastrophic head wounds, tend to bleed out. And the ability to get there, get EMS to the scene, and get them as close to the patients and treat them as quickly as possible has a significant impact on their survival rate. Do you think we're doing enough?
You know, Patrick, a great question, because obviously we're in Columbine, and you read in the book that, you know, we were with Mr. Saunders, the teacher, for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
EMS wouldn't come in because the scene was hot. You know, he ultimately died in my arms before EMS even got there. And then years later, we went through the Platte Canyon. By that time, I've had 2 medics. One was on vacation, and one was in the military and got sent back. So after Platte Canyon, I not only had the 2 medics, I had a doctor on my team. So in today's training, we incorporate EMS into SWAT and try to get them in there with the officers as quick as possible, because seconds matter inside these mass shootings.
And you have to understand, I mean, Patrick, you're an emergency. You're a ambulance driver, EMT. What is it called, EMS now?
Paramedic.
A paramedic. So you're not going to want to go into a scene if it hasn't been secured. So
no, I quite the opposite. If I was trained properly, if I was wearing a level 3 vest and a helmet, I would have absolutely no problem with it. I mean, everything we do is dangerous. But I mean, I would find it more frustrating to be sitting in a staging area looking at my watch, knowing that people are bleeding out.
You know, and not because, getting in there, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it doesn't take long. I mean, people, when you hear that phrase, bleed out, femoral artery will bleed out in a minute and a half. A brachial artery will bleed out in about 2.5-3 minutes. You don't have long. If you're shot in the chest, you know, you don't have long if you have a tension pneumothorax. You know, you need to be decompressed, and it has to happen now. So there's a lot of things that, and our skill set has changed so much that whereas before we would start an IV, now we literally use what's called an interosseous, where we would actually drill into the bone and secure an IV. We've learned so much from battlefield medicine, and you know, to be standing in the staging area waiting would be extremely frustrated. I would never hesitate to go in with the police.
Grant, is there someone Patrick can contact and become like part of a SWAT team medic or something?
You know, absolutely. And all, at least out here in Colorado, all the police departments are attaching medics to their law enforcement and training with them. So they're all going in together in these mass shootings. So it's very common out here, and I'm sure they have some kind of program put together there. So in his local police department, he should talk to them and see what they have together. And I bet if they don't have it now, they're working on it. If they're not, I'd be happy to talk to them about it.
There you go, Patrick.
All right, thank you very much.
Good luck, Patrick.
Thank you for your help.
Grant, whenever an incident happens like Columbine, you see experts on television saying, well, you know, video games are incredibly violent, and television shows and movies and rap music, and they all contribute. You've been a lot closer to this than any of us. Do you think all those things are contributing factors?
You know, I can't say anything about the music. However, that we knew that the shooters in Columbine, you know, practiced on the computers doing what they did. And honestly, for two young men, they were very good at it. So that practice in some way, it did help them, absolutely. Would they have been a match for SWAT? Of course not. But, you know, like I said, now they're not fighting SWAT cops anymore. They're fighting the first patrolman that shows up and now has to go through the door. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of those video games. They'll never go away. I realize it's a financial thing, but I hate to see it, and I hate to see kids playing with them. I kept my son away from them. And, yeah, I think there was contributing factors in that.
All right, Grant, we don't have a lot of time, and yet I have a doozy of a question for you. But, you know, being one of the first responders several times in a place where you can carry a weapon, how do you determine who the shooter is when everyone in a situation is armed?
Well, you know, what we teach is statistically, we can only talk on statistics because every one of them obviously changes, is that you listen for the shooting. And that shooter is not hiding. So as they enter a place where there's a mass shooting going on, if you can't hear it, search for them room to room. As soon as you hear it, go to that room and make entry immediately. There's no negotiation. So that's how it's taught. There's nothing complex about it other than that statistically they're a suicidal mission. They're going to keep shooting until they're either shot or they kill themselves. So get to them quick.
It's we got this book in and we haven't had time to read it, and I can't wait to, because Bullet Riddled, the First SWAT Officer Inside Columbine and Beyond, retired Sergeant Grant Whitus. Thank you so much. Good luck on the book. Where can we get this?
You know, it's in Barnes & Noble, Amazon right now. It comes in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. And if your local store doesn't have it, just have them pick it up.
Thanks, Grant. Again, the book is called Bullet Riddled. What a story. We really appreciate being here, Grant. The best of luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. All right, a quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I had hair like the girl in the Thompson Twins, and people told me it looked good in the 80s. Was that a lie?
Yes. People were lying to you. And I'm sure it wasn't the first time, and I'm positive it wasn't the last time.
And, you know, Bill, something you tend to say, and I know you say it tongue-in-cheek.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like this.
Yes.
You say, oh, it must be true. I've read it on the Internet. There's
yes.
a lot of information out there, what to believe, what not to believe. We're going to find out. We have Dr. Daniel Levitin on the line with us. Sir, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Professor of psychology and behavioral neuroscience at McGill University. And you're going to be at Nutrier High School in Northfield tomorrow night at 7 o'clock talking about your new book, A Field Guide to Lies, Critical Thinking in the Information Age. How do we know what's a lie and what's the truth on the Internet? There's your big question.
It's getting harder and harder to tell, and so I try to set out some simple steps that anybody can follow to separate the wheat from the digital chaff. I mean, it used to be that, you know, if you went to the newsstand or to the supermarket, what looked like a tabloid and what looked like a newspaper were a real newspaper were very different things. You could judge that book by its cover. And you expected one to be more reliable than the other. It's much harder to do on the Internet, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a bit of a hypochondriac, and that's the worst thing that you can do is go to all the medical websites and try and diagnose your own problems, because there's a lot of false stuff out there, isn't there?
Have you been to about 15 or 20 doctors who told you that you were a hypochondriac?
Yes. Maybe. Yes.
When I walk in, they ask me what my prognosis is before I even see them.
Well, I think there's an enormous amount of information available on the web, which empowers us to learn more about our health care and take a more active role in managing our care. But there's a lot of misinformation. And I'll give you one trick, which is next time you want to look up something medically related, instead of using Google.com, use scholar.google.com. And that'll return primarily peer-reviewed articles in refereed journals. So you're getting a lot higher quality hits.
Nice. I didn't know that. Scholar.google.com.
And if you know you're on the right page, it will say Google Scholar. Oh, my God. I am putting a little bookmark on
That's
my
excellent.
Screen right now.
That's excellent.
In fact, Melissa McCarthy is the first person that comes to mind. You'll be on Facebook, and there's a picture of Melissa McCarthy, and it says, "This is the secret to how she lost all that weight." And you click on it, and it is a complete advertisement for Garcinia
Cambogia.
Yeah, I don't even know how to say it.
Yeah.
How do they do that? How come Melissa McCarthy isn't able to say, "Hey, get my information off of that"?
Oh, well, you're asking the wrong guy about that. But what I can tell you is that it's getting harder and harder to tell the difference between these paid advertisements and real news. But one tip is if you're reading a rigorous news source, say the New York Times, for example, they're going to report on a health story and give you both sides of the story. They'll say there's evidence that this thing helps, but they'll go out of their way to find people who disagree with the claim. And that's ultimately what I'm advocating for, is that everybody be allowed to make their own decisions, but to be given the evidence to do so.
What do we do, Professor? As you know, the presidential election is a couple months away. And the word out on the street is that Mr. Trump is a liar. And the word out on the street is that Mrs. Clinton is also a liar. So we're electing the most important person in the world right now. And the legend is they're both liars. So what do we do about that?
Well, they are both liars. If by liar you mean they've said things that aren't true.
Yes. I do mean, that's how I mean it, yes.
Yes. But, you can parse this and ask, was it their intent to deceive, or did they just misrecall something, or did they not understand the nuance, and so there was a distortion? There are some differences there, but what a lot of people are doing is going to sites like PolitiFacts.com. The Washington Post runs a fact-checking site, and they rate almost all the statements made by major candidates for truthfulness. They hunt it down. The fact is, most of us are ill-equipped to do that ourselves, and so thank goodness there are professional journalists who are doing this for us.
But isn't politics, to some extent, a license to lie?
Well, I don't think it needs to be. I think... this is tricky. I think the most important question to ask may not be, is the candidate lying to me?
Yeah.
But the more important question might be, is the candidate, if elected, will they do a good job governing the country? Will they make the world a safer place? Will they make the United States safer? Will they reduce hatred and poverty and things like that? And, boy, if you have to elect a lying SOB to do that, then
then have at it. But when, like, when Donald Trump makes up numbers about, let's go with unemployment, and that one, since that one is well documented, when he's throwing out numbers that aren't even close to being accurate, don't you say to yourself, well, if I can't believe him on that, what can I believe him on?
Well, right. One has to hope that if he's elected and he chooses to serve,
yeah,
that he'll surround himself with smart people who know how to get the job done,
right?
Who have an eye for detail and will implement policies, notwithstanding the fact that his understanding of the nuances seems to be challenged.
All right, we are talking to Daniel Levitin, A Field Guide to Lies. It's in my hand right now. Critical Thinking in the Information Age. We're going to take a quick break. I'm not lying to you. It's pretty quick, Dr. Levitin. 312-981-7200. And then I want to ask the good old doctor about some, you can tell when someone's lying. I have a theory, which I probably shouldn't reveal if my family's listening.
Oh, all right.
But we'll come back. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We are talking to Dr. Daniel Levitin. Let me put him on the phone. He is a professor of psychology and behavioral neuroscience. We're a family of ADHDers. My kids have done CogMed, which is kind of an interesting thing, where you can help your short-term memory, and I noticed you're into that as well.
I'm into CogMed?
Cognitive neuroscience. You've written other books as well, The Organized Mind, This Is Your Brain on Music. But right now we're talking about lying. Let's stick with that.
Thank you, Wendy. I was a little ADHD there for a moment.
No problem. I was told by my mom, I have blue eyes, and every time I lied when I was a kid, my mom said my eyes would turn green. It wasn't such a crazy thing that she said to me because I would avert my eyes every time I lied to her because I thought that she would see the difference. I have in turn used that on my kids, but I have read somewhere that if someone's lying, they kind of look up and to the left because we read left to right. Is there any truth in that statement? If somebody's lying and they're thinking about what they're going to say, they kind of look up and to the left. Any truth to that?
I'm sorry to tell you, Wendy, there's not. And there's been a lot of research on this because, of course, the CIA and the NSA and other police organizations would really like to have some quick and dirty rule for knowing. The fact is that detecting lies is difficult, and in the experimental literature, most studies show an accuracy of about 45% to 60% in detecting whether something is true or not, where 50% would be just guessing.
Right.
And even experienced Secret Service and customs agents with a lot of training can't get much beyond about 70%. So shifting the eyes, looking in a particular place, all unreliable indicators. But there are a couple of things that can help you. One is inconsistencies in the story or implausibilities, things that just really seem very unlikely. Even so, it's important to recognize you're not going to be able to detect all lies in all people because some people have a disorder such that they don't really know when they're lying. And we call them pathological liars because it results from an underlying pathology or disorder in the brain. And there might be one or two politicians in our lifetimes who have had this.
What do you make of people, and I'll use O.J. Simpson as an example. People said about O.J. Simpson, no, he lied so much that even he started to believe his own lies. Does that happen to people, do you think?
Well, I don't think it happens to mentally stable people. I think we all, those of us who are psychologically healthy, which is most of us, know the difference between a truth and a lie. Now, that might not prevent us from repeating a lie over and over again, but, you know, the repetition doesn't make it so, even in our own minds.
Yeah.
All right. So there are things, an example question here, and this is what I want to ask you. Who doesn't believe Neil Armstrong walked on the moon? Or
there are people who don't believe it, that it's a conspiracy, that we didn't have men on the moon.
There are. I'm fascinated by this one.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that, you know, you've heard there are a lot of people, too, that think 9/11 was an inside job.
Right.
How do you use your own brain in figuring out these conspiracies?
Well, you know, I looked into this because as a scientist, I have to keep an open mind. I work in a world in which medical and scientific knowledge is shifting on a regular basis, and what we thought we knew can be supplanted by new information. And it's a job requirement that I take in new information and possibly modify my views, sometimes radically, based on the new information. Not a bad strategy for anybody who wants to make decisions in an election year. Keep an open mind.
Right.
In the case of, let's take the moon landing. There is a hardcore group of people who think it was staged. And three of the claims they make are the following. The flag that you see in those pictures, the flag planted on the moon, seems to be rippling in the wind. But there's no atmosphere on the moon, so there's no wind. Why is it rippling? And why is it sticking straight out? If there was no wind, it would fall, you know, in a heap due to gravity. The third thing is, they say, if you listen to recordings of the astronauts talking to mission control, there's no delay. But the round trip between the Earth and the moon is 500,000 miles. There should be a few-second delay between people talking. So I thought, wow, those are really good points. How in the world are they going to answer that? But, you know, then you go to NASA websites, or you can on the Internet find interviews with people who worked at NASA who, you know, are pretty smart people. I mean, they are rocket scientists. So they knew there wasn't going to be any atmosphere on the moon and that pictures were going to be taken. So they rigged up a special flag with guide wires in it to hold it open. The guide wires got bent on the way up, and so that's why it has this ripply look. But if you look at all the pictures of the flag, it's always the same. It's not as though you've caught it in mid-flap or something. It's held there rigidly. And about the delays, the original tapes, which you can access on the web of the conversations, do have a several-second delay. But when news organizations got their hands on them, or documentary filmmakers, they knew that audiences wouldn't want to sit through a whole bunch of gaps in the conversation, so they edited them out.
Oh.
And I find that compelling. But the conspiracy theorists will say, oh, well, all those people were paid off to say that.
Sure. That makes sense.
You know, I find that unlikely. I think it's implausible that they'd be able to buy off everybody.
Professor, we've talked about politicians and their propensity to lie. And probably if I said to you which profession is most likely to lie, most people would probably say used car salesman. But is there a profession that liars tend to gravitate toward?
Well, I don't think so, because especially today where it's becoming so easy to pin people down. I mean, yeah, I guess used car salesmen have a reputation. I don't know that there is any data on this.
Right.
Lawyers have a reputation for lying, but I don't know that there's data on that. I think that our best defense is to become informed and to keep an open mind, and to respectfully and politely ask follow-up questions when somebody tells us something, like, where did you learn that? Or what makes you think that's true? Or you know, I'm not doubting you. I'd like to know more about the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
This is all really fascinating. A Field Guide to Lies, Dr. Daniel Levitin. And you're going to be at New Trier High School in Northfield. This is tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And what will be the focus of your little talk?
Well, I thought I would talk about the need for critical thinking and some of the ways that the media can take advantage of people who are not thinking critically.
Will you be lying at all during this speech?
I sure hope not.
No, I hope not. But you have to admit, we kind of do every day, don't we?
People lie every day?
Yeah.
I don't.
You never do? You don't
I
think
try
so?
Not to. What do I have to lie about?
No, I don't know.
What are you lying to us about, Bill?
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. But it's just kind of part of us, right? To just kind
well,
of
you know,
exaggerate.
We are a social species, and as a social species, this complicates things. If my Aunt Millie asks me if I like her hat, I'm going to say yes, even if I don't.
Yes.
And, you know, that's just me, but it's part of the social glue that keeps us going. Do I look fat in this? Oh, no. But for things that matter, I think, you know, like political issues or where to invest your money, or whether this is a good job move for you or not, I think it's important to get the facts and make evidence-based decisions and hope that people aren't lying to you, but put some backup systems in place so you can figure it out.
Excellent.
Hook them up to a lie detector.
Yes. Always have a lie detector on your person. Daniel Levitin's book, again, is called A Field Guide to Lies. Don't forget, he'll be visiting New Trier High School in Northfield. That's tomorrow, Thursday, September the 8th at 7 p.m. Visit his website, daniellevitin.com. All the information's there. Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Bill and Wendy.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
A quick break, and then news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, it hurts me to report that a story that you and I talked about 2 weeks ago has gotten uglier.
Don't tell me.
Do you know what it is?
I can tell by the music.
It's clowns.
That's an ugly word.
Clowns.
Ow, is right in the middle of it.
I know. 2 weeks ago, we told you about some goings-on in South Carolina. And this wasn't the first time that this has happened. Apparently, there is now a thing going on where people decide to dress like clowns and then just walk around in the middle of the night.
Stop doing that, people.
Stop doing that, you clowns. That part isn't illegal. It's perfect. You're perfectly within your rights if you want to dress like a clown and walk around, but there were allegations a couple weeks ago that some of these clowns, the South Carolina clowns, were trying to lure children into the forest preserve, and that's bad. That's bad. Well, it's gotten worse. Are you ready for an update? Listen
yes.
to this. The number of clowns prowling around neighborhoods and calling out to children appears to be on the rise. By the way, even if I don't finish that sentence, that's already the scariest sentence I've ever said out loud. The number of clowns prowling around neighborhoods and calling out to children appears to be on the rise. With the latest reported sightings coming out of North Carolina. They're very competitive, the Carolinas. North Carolina says, if South Carolina's got creepy clowns, we got to get some creepy clowns.
Everybody wants a creepy clown.
Everybody does.
Is there anything different than a creepy clown?
I don't know. Around 10 a.m. on Tuesday, why, that's just a day ago. Around 10 a.m. on Tuesday, a resident reported seeing a masked figure emerging from the woods near an apartment complex in Greensboro, North Carolina, police announced in a release. Now, that's almost identical to what was going on in South Carolina. They're always in, like, a wooded area, these clowns.
It's a copy clown.
It is a copy clown.
No cat.
No. These are clowns we're discussing. The figure was described as wearing a scary clown mask, which is redundant, a red curly wig, a yellow dotted shirt, blue clown pants, and clown shoes. Wendy, I'm no detective, but this is a clown. This would be the very definition of a clown.
If it looks like a clown.
Right, and it smells like a clown, you have a clown. A second person who says he saw the clown. Now, if you'll remember, the most disturbing part about all this to me last week, or 2 weeks ago, was that they kept saying a person dressed as a clown.
It was either a clown or a person dressed as a clown. That's crazy.
There's no, in my opinion, and I'm not an expert, there is no difference between a clown and a person dressed like a clown. If you were going to take this, I used a bad example two weeks ago. If you were going to say, I saw two guys and one was a heart surgeon and the other was dressed as a heart surgeon, I would say to you, only trust the heart surgeon. The guy dressed as a heart surgeon won't be able to do anything.
Right.
But if I said a clown and a guy dressed like a clown want to entertain at a birthday party, you go, well, get either one of them.
No, you got to go clown. The guy dressed as a clown doesn't know the clown tricks.
What are the clown tricks?
The squirting flower, the invisible dog.
Anyone can
juggling.
Do that. Anyone can do that.
Not everybody can juggle.
Not well, but
I can juggle. You can't juggle.
I can't, but I'm not dressed like a clown today.
What are you insinuating that I am?
No. A second person who says he saw the clown. Now, this guy comes right out. That was a clown. That wasn't a guy dressed like a clown. That, what I saw, was a clown. Second person who says he saw the clown responded by arming himself with a machete.
Okay. As much as I don't like clowns, don't grab a machete.
What is the weapon of choice when confronted by a clown?
A bottle of seltzer
water.
Bottle
of seltzer water, right?
It'll just push him back, keep him far enough away from you, and won't hurt him.
Right.
Ruin the makeup, yes.
Now, keep in mind that this story takes place modern day, 2016. Who has a machete?
A lot of people have a machete.
I don't have a machete. I wouldn't know where to get them. If you said to me right now, I'll give you $1,000 if you produce a machete and a half an hour. I wouldn't know where to go.
Danny Trejo.
Oh, okay. You're right.
Just ask him.
He armed himself with a machete and chased the masked man into the woods. However, police said...
Gather around, fellow boosters. This is Bill Left's scary story.
It's Clown Corner. Police said that they couldn't locate the suspect during the search. Well, based on the fact that he has a scary clown mask, a red curly wig, yellow dotted shirt, blue clown pants, and clown shoes, I don't know that he'd be that hard to find.
Maybe he stripped naked.
Oh, maybe.
And then how would you determine if it was a clown or a guy who had dressed like a clown?
That's true. That's where it gets confusing. 2 days earlier, children had reported seeing a similarly dressed figure prowling around their community in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That's 30 miles to the west. This guy's making good, some pretty good tracks on his unicycle. That's how they travel. I don't think if you're an Uber driver, you'd even pick up a clown, would you? I'm a clown and I'm at the corner. I'm not picking you up. You're a clown.
I don't have room in my trunk for your unicycle.
Right. Right. They described a creepy character wearing white overalls, white gloves, red shoes, red bushy hair, a white face, and a red nose. Winston-Salem police, well, again, just put down clown and save yourself 20 minutes. It's a clown. That's what they all wear, kind of, give or take a little bit.
They're more experimental than just the white overalls and a white shirt.
Yeah, that's true. This may be a mime. I think this is a mime that they were going after. And you can only catch them if they're either trapped in a box or going against the wind.
I know.
Those are the only two times you can catch them. Winston-Salem police stated all this in an incident report obtained on Tuesday. That's yesterday. That mystery man allegedly offered... Now, this is where it gets a little dicey. All of it's upsetting, but this is where it gets a little bit much. That mystery man, the one I just described with the white overalls and the gloves and the red shoes, allegedly offered kids treats if they would follow him into the woods. That's where it gets bad. One adult apparently heard but did not see the clown. Well, how did that happen? Was he averting his eyes? How could he not see this if he was within ear's distance? That's bad. That call came in at around 8:30 p.m., that's just yesterday, and police said that another followed nearly 4 hours later. Officers responded to the scene about 1.5 miles away, but didn't find anyone matching the caller's description. I hate to say it, but duh. You're either going to see that guy or you're not going to see that guy. There's no close on it. That guy kind of looks like the description. He's got blue bushy hair instead of red bushy hair. You're either gonna look exactly like that guy or nothing like that guy. The chilling incidents came about 2 weeks after residents in Greenville, South Carolina, that's 180 miles southwest of Winston-Salem, reported similar sightings. That's the one we talked about 2 weeks ago.
Do you want to talk to Tom? Has this intrigued you? Tom, yes. You saw a bunch of clowns?
It must have been 1979, 1980, or something like that. I'm a radio nerd and was up on an early Sunday morning, I think going to a ham radio ham fest where people sell old junk and just get together on an early Sunday morning. It's a big swap fest. Fort Wayne, lived in Northwest Indiana, and saw this morning, like on different occasions throughout the region, like clowns just driving in cars normally.
Regular cars?
Just regular cars.
Yeah.
And minivans or whatever. It's like a 5:45 in the morning, 5:30, something like that. And thinking it odd. And then somewhere later along in the trip, seeing more clowns, like outside their cars in a parking lot, two different cars with two different clowns in their meeting. And I'm thinking, like, okay. This is 1979. There's no internet. There's no way to figure out.
Right.
Why clowns are coagulating.
Coagulating.
That's what they do.
But they were at like 6 in the morning, because I'm trying to get off to Fort Wayne, Indiana to go to this ham fest. And it's just about 4 to 5 different instances of clowns in cars.
That's strange.
I would imagine clowns get up early, because there's a lot of clowning.
It's just odd. I'm glad.
What about a convention of some sort? Could there have been a clown?
It had to have been.
like
yeah, it'd have to
at
be.
A hotel or something yeah. in the area.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't pick out where it was, but they were all sort of still in that area. It's like if there's a whatever going on, it's a a popular event, and they'd all been like probably obviously up all night getting their makeup perfect, because none of them were half-assed. They were completely.
That's one of the clown's names, Wendy.
He shows one cheek.
Right.
It's cut out of his
right.
pants.
He used to be Cheeky the Clown, but that name was already copywritten.
They were all well done. They were all completely in full.
Maybe it was a clown brunch because they just graduated from clown college.
Oh, yeah.
I know. It was just very odd to see them. And I've never seen that happen before or after.
Tom, when you would tell people in the area that you had seen this, what was their reaction?
Oh, they
put down the bottle. Is that what they said?
No, they knew I'm not a liar. I have enough problems
right.
to not make things up. It's not like, whoa, whatever that was. I saw a semi-tractor trailer cross a rickety wooden bridge out by Valparaiso that should never have been able to hold. And I was out there in the middle of the night taking a picture.
Yeah.
Just a night picture of this, a moonlight exposure of the bridge, a time exposure. And I thought I was going to have a picture of this collapsed bridge with a semi because there was a huge wreck on US 30. But no, that didn't happen. But
no.
Goofy stories. I don't need to make things up.
No, I don't think
no,
so.
No, write a book, Tom. Mm-hmm. We'll read it.
Tom, thank you. We appreciate it. How about that? About that?
A clown coagulation.
That's the correct term.
Good to know.
All right, more of this. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, we're telling you the creepy. What's beyond creepy? What's the next step after creepy? Ultra creepy, super creepy, mega creepy. The really, really creepy story of clowns that started out a couple of weeks ago in South Carolina. Now people in North Carolina are also reportedly seeing clowns. These clowns are luring children. It says luring children into the wooded areas in the Carolinas. According to an incident report filed at the time. Now this goes back a couple of weeks ago when the story started in South Carolina. Now it's spread to North Carolina. Children and adults say that they saw several clowns wandering around Greenville's Fleetwood Manor apartment complex. This all began.
Right. I remember the Fleetwood Manor.
Yep, because it sounds like Fleetwood Manor.
Right.
That's on August the 19th when all that took place. So now just two short weeks later, we've got it in North Carolina. Some of the masked figures allegedly even called out to the children.
Hey, kid.
Yeah, because they wouldn't know their names, right?
I hope not. Maybe they're psychic clowns.
Ooh, the worst of all clowns. And displayed large amounts of money. I got to admit, that would work with me.
Today, candy that would wouldn't.
Work, that, candy, I would go, oh, that's nice. What else do you have? And then as soon as they pull out money, I go, I only get $20 a day. That clown wants to give me $50. You'd never see me again. I'd be in the woods forever.
Or your
forever.
Wife, yes.
Right, right. So they are displaying large amounts of money. It doesn't say the exact denomination, but large amounts of money in a bid to lure the children closer, witnesses told local sheriff's office. Why are witnesses just seeing this and not doing something about it?
They're calling the authorities.
I would act on it. I would get...
What, do you take the clown down?
Yeah, take the clown down. That's my phrase. Take the clown down. I'd go, does anyone have a machete? Because apparently that's the only way clowns respond in this state.
Well, you know, vampires, you can only use the stake through the heart. Right. A clown, it's a machete.
Machete through the neck. That was a gruesome picture, wasn't it? Authorities have said that they are increasing surveillance. Good move, fellas. And hope to discourage pranksters from carrying out similar behavior.
There's a blip on the radar. Oh, no, that's just his name.
Right.
Blip the Clown.
Blip the Clown is on the radar.
What would you think if this was just like a promotional thing for Baskets coming back on the air?
No, you know what? Somebody, where did I read this? Somebody said, you know who Rob Zombie is?
He
is a musician, but now he's also a film director. Somebody said he's got some clown-based movie coming out in a month or so.
Oh, yeah.
But if that were true, your marketing blitz would not be on the Carolinas. You would do this, no offense to
the
Carolinas.
They're big white zombie fans in the Carolinas.
Are they? I guess. But you would do it in a major market. You wouldn't say, I'll tell you what, Greenville is the place to hit people.
Yeah, but you start small and then you start infiltrating the big cities. Then everybody's talking about clowns every other week.
Yeah. All right. I guess that would work. It says, although it is lawful to dress as a clown.
Which is good to know. Check the rule book.
Right. Everybody consult your rule book. Given the heightened tensions about these entertainers, and I use that term incorrectly, officials are discouraging copycat behavior from individuals who may find it humorous to mimic suspicious behavior. This according to a statement from the Greensboro Police Department. Entertainers.
Well, 630 might have it figured out why it's happening in the Carolinas. This person says, I believe clowns migrate north after summer.
I didn't realize. All right, a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.